Blog Talk Radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, damas y caballeros, welcome to Leave It in the Ring, boxing radio show, Boxing Scene's official radio show. I believe I have my co-host, Strike Hart, Justin Strike Hart, on the line with me. You there, Justin? Strike, you on the line with me, brother? Oh, I guess he's having some problems. Anyways, this is your host, David Duenas. Okay. My host, Justin Strikehart, should be on right now at any minute. And then we got Gabriel Montoya coming in a little later. He's on a set filming a movie. I don't exactly know what movie it is. He didn't give me a whole lot of details about it, but hopefully it's a good movie. I don't know. It might be one of those CB movies, or it could be even a porno flick. Who's to know? I don't know. He hasn't let me know. Hopefully he'll let us know when he gets on the line with us. And then we got two new guys. They're going to be debuting on Leave It in the Ring. We got Ernesto Gavion and Luis Sanadovo. They're going to be calling in a short bit and speaking to us. Let me see. Strike, you on the line with us, brothers?
I'm here. Strikehart is here. How's it going, Dave?
I'm doing good, brother. How you doing, man? You're running a little late, too, huh?
Just a little bit, man. I was getting the last couple things in order. So I squeaked in just on time. In my opinion, I'm just on time.
Yeah. Well, anyways, we took a short break. I know last week a lot of people were emailing us about what's going on, why was there no show last week. We just needed to take a break, regather ourselves. You know, doing this is like it's a 24/7 thing for us. We're out there hustling and bustling and trying to get, you know, the latest news out there for all the fight fans to listen to, it's a nice little break, Strike. You know what I'm talking about? You know, just kind of wind down a little bit and just get ready for the fights that happened Saturday. You had Miguel Cotto step in with Yuri Foreman. My prediction was wrong about it. I don't know about your Strike.
Mine. I was wrong.
I got to eat crow, just like everybody else. If you predicted for Yuri Foreman to do his thing against Miguel Cotto, you got to eat crow, and I'm definitely going to eat crow right now. But, hey, you know what? I think that's the fun of it. You know what I mean? That's the gist of it, because you get to predict, and that's why it's called a prediction. We're not really, really sure. I wasn't really sure if I should keep riding the coattail of Miguel Cotto, seeing that the guy is just a true warrior, a guy that, never lets up. You know, he always decides to give us the best fight possible. And if this was a little bit earlier in his career, I'm talking about maybe after the Jennings fight, I probably would have picked Miguel Cotto. You know, I know there were still even questions around him. You know, the sad thing about it is after facing Antonio Margarito, there's always been a huge question mark over the head of Miguel Cotto, like if he's the Riddler from Batman, Strike.
Yeah, I was surprised, even though that, Yuri Foreman isn't exactly a big puncher at all, that Miguel Cotto didn't really even swell up that much, no, much less get cut on the face. I thought for sure that he would at least be cut. But, you know, as you said, I mean, we have to eat crow, but at the same time, who would have predicted that Yuri Foreman's leg would just give out like that? I don't think anybody predicted that part of it. And on top of that, Arthur McKenzie Jr., that whole debacle, nobody could have predicted the way that fight would end either. But as far as Miguel Cotto goes, there was some promising things that I saw, and I don't know how much of it has to do with Emmanuel Stewart or not, but I mean the Miguel Cotto that I'm so used to would have jumped all over an injured fighter a couple years ago, and he was much more patient than I think that I've seen him in a long time. So I was happy to see that. There was a point in the fight though where I think Miguel Cotto was just he wasn't really putting too much pressure on him because he knew that the TKO should be coming at any moment. And then he kind of – that got taken away from him, and he had to take matters into his own hands because Arthur McKinney wasn't going to stop the fight unless he did. So, yeah. But,
right.
But and it was an impressive comeback for Miguel Cotto, and it'd be interesting to see who he really pursues at 154, you know?
Well, you know, I know, you know, if you're a strong Miguel Cotto fan, obviously you're going to say he's back. And just like right now, you just mentioned the bum knee of Yuri Foreman. How much in play was it, or was it the actual Miguel Cotto pressure that made the knee be a bum and go underneath him? And we saw the outcome of it. We had a chance to have Yuri Foreman. I'm going to play exactly what Yuri Foreman had to say about the whole situation with the knee, you know. And I'm pretty sure a lot of fight fans are going to be, you know, a little up and up on what he had to say or what the outcome, in his opinion, should have been or could have been if so-and-so and if and ifs would have been, you know, cross the T's and, you know, dotted the I's and stuff. But I don't know. If you're a fight fan, you want to call in and you want to tell us what your thoughts about it. We got three guests coming on. We're going to have Ramon Rocky Martinez out of Puerto Rico, the WBO super featherweight champion, call in and talk to us a little bit about his successful win. You know, what happened 2 weeks ago, I believe, in Puerto Rico. We're also going to have Alfredo Angulo, El Perro, who's going to be facing Joaquin Azalin July 17th, the Agua Caliente Casino in Rancho Mirage, California. And then you're going to hear what Yuri Foreman's got to say. And also, I got a couple I was down at the Andre Ward camp yesterday watching the open workout, had a chance to speak to Andre Ward a little bit, and had to hear a little bit of what he had to say about the Lakers versus the Celtics and about Ellen Green's heart. Then I'm going to play a little bit of what Zab Judah had to say about Devon Alexander, who was on Viva in the Ring when we debuted on Boxing Scene for the very first time. Devon Alexander had a lot to say about Zab Judah, saying that he was not, I don't know, what was it again that he said about him not being making any sense, meaning money-wise, there was no money there to be made by facing Zab Judah. And the New Yorker from Brooklyn Delight said, he's crazy. But I'm not going to give it all away what he had to say about Alexander. But he also had some things to say about, you know,
I think the fan was actually like a rabid fan from St. Louis who wanted justice for what happened to Corey Sphinx a while back. That's where all that emotion was coming from. But yeah, that fan was a real trip.
Yeah, it was. But like I said, if you want to call in and tell us, was it the knee, really, honestly, that made Yuri not perform the way he should have performed? Or was it the real comeback of Miguel Cotto? You can call in at 347-215-7598 and let us know your thoughts. I'm going to patch in right now really quick, a fight fan. Area code 843. You're on live right now and leave it in the ring, brother. What's on your mind?
What's happening, fellas?
What's up, brother? How you doing, man? So what do you think? Bum knee or the real Miguel Cotto's back in the ring?
Let me tell you something, man. I'm a Cotto fan. That was refreshing to watch, you know. I figured I called it. You know, I won some money. I'm happy about that. But
look at him rubbing it in.
Cotto was a huge jab, you know, something you should have did more of when he fought Pacquiao. You know, he was – his leg, his feet movement was there, man, you know. And I think we, if he stays with Manuel Stewart, good things are going to happen, man, because that's, you know, I criticized the corner since day one. That dude, Santiago, wasn't, you know, didn't need to be in there. Man, he needed to have somebody with some experience up in that corner, you know. But I wouldn't mind seeing him fight Anglo. That's what I want to see him fight now.
Hey, you know what? And,
good fight.
Would be a good fight, brother. I'm going to put you on hold real quick. And you know what? He's right. I got to agree with them. I'd love to see Alfredo Angulo, but different fighter, Strike. Completely different fight. You know, he's not going to have a fighter that's going to be backpedaling away from him. He's going to have a fighter that doesn't know how to backpedal. Or he's going to have – and the fight – doesn't know how to, doesn't have good footwork. Let's be honest. You know, doesn't have the greatest footwork in the world. He goes forward. He's got, there's one thing that would raise questions, man, that I would have to say that, you know, Miguel Cotto and Emmanuel Stewart would have to work on is Miguel Cotto doesn't seem to know how to get away from a right hand still.
Uh-huh.
He got hit cleanly a couple of times. He got hit cleanly three times from Yuri Foreman when Yuri decided to stand and trade with him. And, I got to go back again. Yeah, you're right. I was wrong. I'm eating crow. I was completely wrong about what the outcome was going to be. But I wasn't the only one. There was a lot of people, you know, predicting Yuri was going to be able to just outmaneuver him. I thought Yuri Foreman, in my opinion, just was a little too jittery. I think maybe the atmosphere and everything else got a little too much to him. He didn't seem relaxed. He looked like the white bunny from Alice in Wonderland. He was all over the place, you know, didn't seem to settle down.
Yeah. No. He just couldn't seem to get into any kind of rhythm. And he had moments, but he never really was able to control the action for, like, an extended period of time. He'd have, like, a 30-second, you know, spurt. And then his knee gave out, and that was pretty much it. But I had him winning two rounds, but one of them he won a lot more cleanly than the other. He wasn't having a good night. I thought that he was headed for a loss regardless of an injury or not. And Miguel Cotto looked really good.
He was behind in all the scorecards of the judges,
right,
you know?
Yeah,
he was behind
definitely.
All the scorecards of the judges, you know? And
it couldn't have been any other way.
No, couldn't have been any other way. You know, I think he only had three rounds left, and anything, he had to have a come-from-behind KO over Miguel Cotto. And I don't know about you, but I knew I was thinking, like, there's no way that's going
to
happen. I mean, but you know,
I don't know if you're ready to talk about Arthur McCanty Jr. yet or not, but I'm ready to go anytime. Okay. Just know I'm chomping at the bit for that one.
No, I'm going to wait, you know. I'm going to wait until Gabriel Montoya, Zahn, and Ernesto and Luis Sanadova, when they're on right now, they should be calling in about 6 o'clock, our three of the guys, and we welcome both the new guys, I'm not sure if they're both from Everlast. I know Ernesto is, but I know they're both from Boxing Scene, and this is something that was in the works that we were talking about, bringing them on to the team, just because there's a couple of things that are in the works, Fight Fans, that we want to bring that I think would really honestly fill in the crave that hardcore fight fans like myself have. You know, we want to see certain things behind the scenes. You know, we want to get to have an up and close and personal relationship with fighters that have yet hit that pinnacle of being a superstar, that have the potential of becoming a superstar, or get to see them live, you know. And we got a lot of things that we're trying to do. We're trying to bring to the table. So it's always in the works. You know how we do it on Leaving the Ring, man. We're always trying to put in and do the best that we can. We're just trying to better ourselves. We're not trying to be better than anybody else, okay? We're just trying to better ourselves, all right? So let's not get that thing twisted, you know? I know there's a couple other things, too. A lot of fight fans are wondering what happened to Chris Herrera. Chris has decided to resign. It wasn't really, honestly, anything I wanted to talk about over the air, just because out of respect of Chris, you know, Chris had his own reasons of leaving in the ring. But we wish Chris the best. The door is always going to be open for Chris. You know, I know some fight fans, and they had some mixed feelings about that. They were upset. Some weren't. It's just the way it is. Chris is an all-around great guy.
Right.
Hate to see him leave, but he had his own plans. Yeah, you know,
talk about the fans
plans.
Being upset. I'm upset too. So, you know, I don't think anybody was really excited about that choice. I know.
No,
I wasn't.
And you know, Chris has some stuff in the works for himself, and I understand that. You know, as men, we have to understand and communicate. And, got nothing bad to say about Chris. All-around great guy. We only wish Chris the best. The door is always open, like I said. Blood, I know a lot of fight fans are wondering what happened to Blood. Blood's still around. He just bought a house. That's why he hasn't been on Leaving the Ring, you know. So he's handling his business. He's getting married. The whole works and stuff. So we got to kind of let him do his stuff. But I speak to Blood on a daily basis. And I know some fight fans were feeling that, the original cats are leaving in the ring because we got the new guys coming in. No, that's not true. Leaving Ring has a lot of people. We got a lot of people backing us up, and we give everybody, you know, shout outs. You know, we just have we have four different new writers that just joined the team. So shouts out to them, the writers, Barbara, to Bonte, to Angel Castle, and Jesse. Shout outs to those guys that are writing fantastic articles for Leaving the Ring. And like I said, hopefully you guys welcome Ernesto and Luis to the radio show, as well as you guys have embraced us and welcomed us and made us feel at home whenever time we're on the radio show. So, but hey, shout out to Chris, man. I wish you the best of luck, brother, and whatever you decide to do and whatever you're pursuing to do, we only wish you the best. And if we can help you out in any way, we definitely, definitely will, man. But going back, you know, got a lot of fights coming up. Got some coming up next week. We got some coming up this week. What's one of the fights that we should be aware about for this Friday or Saturday here, Strike?
Well, this Friday night, ESPN2's Friday night fights. The main event is a middleweight bout between Elvin Ayala of New Haven, Connecticut, and David Lemieux of Montreal, Canada. It's going to be taking place at the Uniprix Stadium in Montreal. If you don't already know, David Lemieux is a hard-hitting young fighter who's always had the home advantage. He, once again, will be fighting at home. This will be a test for him and Ayala, who made it to the 12th round a couple years ago in a middleweight bout, which he lost by knockout to Arthur Abraham. Since then, Ayala has been in against light opposition outside of a fight with Lawan Simon, who was coming off of back-to-back losses against Arthur Abraham and Sebastian Sylvester. But Ayala was able to make a comeback. Simon was able to make a comeback in the fight with Ayala. He won a 12-round decision in October of 2009. This will be Lemieux's chance to make a statement against adorable fighter in Evan Ayala, who never really made it all the way. But, you know, for a guy, David Lemieux, who wants to make a name, a young guy with a big punch, I believe he has 22 wins and 21 knockouts. This will be a stepping stone for him to bigger and better things.
A stepping stone, and Evan Ayala at one time was considered a taunt prospect that was going to hopefully do something. And, you know,
right.
Obviously he ended up hitting up his roadblock that he
things,
didn't get any
don't
further.
Things don't work out. Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work out. You know, and that's the way boxing is and stuff, man. So it didn't work. It doesn't work out. But
Arthur Abraham can be a roadblock for a lot of people. So.
A lot of people, you know, and you know, but the thing is, though, too, is with, you know, Evan Ayala, you can't take nothing away from him. He could be a roadblock block for this Friday on Friday night fights, but like you said, he more likely now, especially being on Friday night fights, is they're trying to kind of cement somebody's career or give them a push, which is the, you know, push from the butt. To go into
right.
Leading themselves into like Showtime or HBO, they make sure their matchmaking is up to par, meaning that their guy who is going to be headlining is going to be the successful guy on Friday night fights. You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely. I mean, this guy has literally. It's not often you see a guy with 22 fights and he's literally never left his hometown, and that's what we're seeing here. And this, to me, this is him testing the waters against a guy who is going to be tough for him, but should he come out on top, which is what is expected, maybe then he'll be ready to go outside of his comfort zone and take on, you know, a challenge, a big contender, or possibly even, you know, get a title eliminator type fight. So, but on the undercard of that fight, we have Brian Vera, who was KO'd not only just by Jadon Codrington, but James Kirkland recently. He's coming off of a 3-fight losing streak, and he'll be trying to make a comeback against Sebastian Demers. He's coming off a March win, Sebastian, against William Joppy. It was a majority decision, so you might call it a sloppy win against Joppy. yeah, and Arthur Abraham actually remains the constant here in our little discussion, because he also was KO'd by Arthur Abraham in 2007. So Demers is not an undefeated guy. He's 30 years old, and he's looking for an impressive win here because he happens to be in the loaded super middleweight division. So Brian Vera,
right.
You know, he is a tough guy, but he is coming off quite a losing streak. So both guys are really looking to make an impression, and one of them just might have to call it a day after this one, really. This is a real crossroads-type fight.
Absolutely. Let me see. Let me make sure that our translator is on the line. Z, are you on the line with us?
Yes, I am.
How are you doing, Z?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I think we do have our guest on the line, WBO super featherweight Ramon Rocky Martinez, 24-0, 15 KOs. Rocky, are you on the line with us? Ahí estás, Rocky. Rocky, are you there?
Hello.
Hello, Rocky, ¿cómo estás?
Ajá, muy bien, gracias a Dios.
Rocky, yo voy a hablar en inglés y, y Z va a hablar en español, ¿ok?
Ok, sí, pero...
Hola,
okay. So the last... Z, my first question is going to be to Rocky is, the last time we saw him, he KO'd his opponent, which was Gonzalo Manguria, in four rounds. How does he feel from the last time he was in the UK, he was having some trouble, and this time around... He looked strong. He looked invincible.
So you want comments from him on his performance in this last fight?
Yeah, I went out for some reason. The ending of my question was that from the last time we see him in the UK, he didn't look too well. He looked like he was gassed out. From this time around, he looked strong. What was the difference in training camp between those fights? What happened there?
Hola, Rocky. La primera pregunta que te tienen es la última pelea tuya que fue con Gonzalo Munguía. Ganaste por knockout en el cuarto round. Antes de eso, tuviste una pelea en el UK con Nicky Cook y no te viste como que tuviste un poco más problemas en esa pelea que en esta con Munguía. En esa te viste mucho más fuerte, más como invencible. ¿Cuál fue la diferencia en cuanto a entrenamiento entre esas dos peleas? Rocky.
Is he there? What happened to him? Oh, no, we lost him.
Uh-oh.
Okay.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. Okay. All right, we lost him. So he'll call right back and hopefully... Let me see, yeah, should be calling right back in, find out what's going on. Sorry about that, guys. Go ahead and continue, Strike, about what the fights are happening on Friday and Saturday.
Sure. The biggest fight happening this Saturday, and maybe it speaks to the fact that it is kind of a light weekend, is going to be Ivan Calderon, who's defending his WBO light flyweight belt against Jesus Uribe in Madison Square Garden. Calderon, as you'll remember, is coming off of two fights with Mayall, and both which were stopped by accidental headbutts. I believe one was a technical draw and the other one was a technical decision. So Calderon is, in my opinion, and I'm sure you'll agree with me, Dave, is just looking for kind of an easy night back against Jesus. He's the right kind of opponent to come back and have a relatively safe defense of your title. Nothing too spectacular, unfortunately, but that's what it is.
You know, I mean, yeah, you know, Ivan obviously is a pound-for-pound guy, the iron boy, is one of those type of fighters, man, that just doesn't seem to have anybody there in his division to give him any work. You know, I'm trying to find out about Rocky Martinez. I apologize, man. That's what happens when we have a live show. It might have been some line. I don't know. I text right now to find out if we can get him back on. Hopefully we can get him back on. I think we got our other co-host, Ernesto. You on the line with us, brother?
Yeah, I just dialed in. I'll get on my Skype as soon as I can. I apologize for being a little late, running behind as always. But I'm on.
Hey, that's what happens when you're a working man, brother.
Yeah, my reception is going to be in and out, so I'm going to try to do my best.
No problem. Right now, we're just trying to get a hold of Rocky. He was on, but he got something happened. He just got off. We lost reception with him. It could be the Block Talk. I know that I was having some problems getting on Block Talk a little while ago, so it could be
okay.
That. I just text the PR for Rocky to see what happened, and hopefully they'll call right back in so we can have him in. But right now we're talking about Ivan Calderon, the Iron Boy, who's going to be stepping in. And I was talking to Strike about it. And Strike, I agree with you. You know, it's something just to kind of bypass him for the moment so that he can just be busy. You know, he's that gifted where nobody's going to make that Puerto Rican star look bad at all. You know, the kid could box. He knows how to box backwards. Doesn't got a whole lot of pop, but he's had pressure fighters go at him. He's had pressure guys try to, weigh him down. But the kid is just too good. You know, just too good.
He seems to be the only one who really likes to stay at such a lightweight, too. I mean, for an older guy to have not moved up yet just to pursue a bigger purse fight is something that you don't see too often. That's part of the reason why he never really is lucky in having opponents like that. In my opinion, it's that he's what, 35 or something like that, and he's still fighting at light flyweight? You're not going to find too many guys who want to stay at that weight. That's like a young man's weight, and they're out of there as soon as they can get out.
And you're right, man. I mean, you know, well, this thing, too, you know, he doesn't want to move up, but why move up? In my opinion, why move up? If he's cleaning it out, I mean, if he did jump up, I think he's playing with whether or not his skills are going to stay to the level of what he brings at the lightweight division that he's at right now. So it's one of those things is he can move up, look bad, or stay where he's at and be comfortable, be dominant, and stay a champion. Really, honestly, who's really screaming and crying or scratching for him to move up and try to face anybody? I don't know.
Nobody, but that's part of the problem. Like, he'll fight on, like, HBO, you know, undercards, and they won't televise his fight. And I don't know if that's the case everywhere, but unless you're buying a pay-per-view, it's pretty hard to see Ivan Calderon fight. That's all. I'm just saying if he was a guy chasing the almighty dollar, that's what he would do.
Yeah, but, you know, he's a really small guy, too, man. You got to look at that. And it sucks that you don't get to see his fights, and I'm glad that, you know, Fox Sports is going to televise it, you know. But, you know, it's just one of those things that he's just too good for his own good. Unfortunately, you know, he's not going to really – I know they've had him on pay-per-view. You know, the numbers weren't fantastic because, unfortunately, his style is not intriguing. It's not one of those ones that draw you.
Right.
He's like a Floyd Mayweather Jr., where they need an opponent to draw people in to want to watch him. And, you know, Ivan is just one of those guys that's just going to be too good for anybody to be faced in there. And if he decides to jump, just face anybody that's going to be anything at least slightly dangerous for him, he's going to be way out of his element, way out of his division, you know. And being a smaller guy like that, you don't really want to play with something like that. You know what I mean? If you're going to play – he plays right now with fire with the guys in his division, but if he jumps up, he's going to be playing with bonfires. And definitely you're going to be burned in a bonfire.
Could be, yeah. Maybe I'm just hoping for something exciting that isn't really to his benefit. He seems to have found his comfort zone at light flyweight. And obviously, at 33-0, it's working out for him. So, we'll leave that up to him, huh?
Definitely leave that up to him. And Ernesto, he got lost on the air too. He's going to be trying to call in. They lost signal with him. They're trying to get a hold of him again, Rocky Martinez. So hopefully, we'll get him back on. And they're letting me know right now that they're calling them to get him back on. At 6 o'clock, we got Alfredo El Perro Angulo calling in at 6 o'clock. And then a little later, we're going to play the replay of Yuri Foreman and really hear what he had to say. And then we're going to be playing some other sound bites that, you know, we have on Leaving the Ring. Like I said, we were out there at the Andre Ward open workout and then had a chance to be on the press conference call with Zab Judah. And he had a lot to say about his comeback. Him talking about he wants to clean out the 140 division. But definitely, I think he's being realistic by saying, you know, I got maybe one or two fights, and then I want to jump to the big names. He says he feels good. He's just one of those kind of fighters. And, Z, thank you for staying on with us, Z. I know she's still on the line. But, you know, Zab is just one of those fighters, man, that when he came out, I got to say, man, I was like, whoa, this guy's the truth. And little and surely, little by little, he just kind of basically fell apart on his own doing. You know what I mean? A little bit too much partying, a little bit too much this. And I believe we have Rocky back on the line. Rocky, ¿estás ahí otra vez?
Okay, pero pon algo, te vemos mal.
Rocky, you there?
La apago. No, la apago.
Rocky.
Con las cosas tías.
Mr. Martinez. Hello.
Me vale la ahí.
All right, hold on, let's see if I
can
Rocky.
Get a translation there, Z.
Rocky, ¿estás ahí? Hello, Rocky. Can you hear me?
I don't know, Rocky, if he can hear us. I stopped hearing him as well, so.
I know, I did too. I stopped hearing Rocky. I don't know. It might be a bad connection to Rocky's part. Rocky, you there, Rocky?
Going once.
Going twice. I see him. They're still on the line. Wow, it's just one of those things, huh?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Technology
right, well,
is not always our friend.
It's not. Not today, I guess, you know.
It wasn't mine a couple weeks ago when I had that terrible storm either, so I feel Rocky's pain.
You know, well, let me tell you this. Earlier, I was trying to get on the show, and, you know, because it tells you you got to be 15 minutes early to be on the show so you get everything prepared and ready, get the switchboard ready and all that, and I couldn't get through. It kept telling me the lines were busy, I've had a couple fight fans call in and write to me on leaveitaring@gmail.com saying that they couldn't get through. They were having a lot of problems. So it's something that we're going to work on and fix. Something we definitely got to work on and fix, man. I'm trying to get it in, but I don't know what's going on. I'm going to text them again and say, hey, we had you on, but you weren't talking. And we'll go from there. Any fights out there, brother, we need to talk about, or should I just play the Yuri Foreman audio interview that we did today with him?
Being that Ivan Calderon is the biggest fight this weekend, I think that you should play your sound bite. That would be the best way to go.
All right, let's do that, okay? Let's go right now into Yuri Foreman and what he had to say. And like I said, he had a lot of stuff to say about the fight, and hopefully we can get Rocky on before we get Alfredo Angulo. If not, we'll have to try to schedule him in for next week because right now we're having some technical problems and patching him through. But here goes Yuri Foreman.
This is an exclusive from
with Miguel Cotto. What are your thoughts about that fight?
Everything was, you know, I was in the game. I was trying, you know, doing my thing. But, you know, something occurred that was not in my control, the injury. And since then it was, it was not successful.
You know, this was a mega, mega fight for your career and for New York and even for Puerto Ricans. Did some of the limelight, do you believe, did it get kind of to you? Because it didn't seem like you were settled in your style. It seemed like you were a little more tense stepping in the ring.
Yeah, I mean, perhaps, you know. I mean, like, first round was a little... too excited, you know, so took me like a little bit longer to get into my rhythm, you know. So I was a little bit tense, but things got better, you know, a little later.
His jab seemed to be very effective. Did that surprise you, and did that take you out of your game plan and what you were planning to do?
No, it's not, you know. No, it's not. It's, you know, it happened in the gym, and it didn't surprise me. I knew that he had a good jab, but it didn't get me out of my game, you know.
Did any of his punches, Yuri, did any of them hurt you, or was it more or less what the knee was happening?
Listen, I don't want like say his punches didn't hurt. They have a good punching power, but it didn't like bubble me or something, you know. The damage that really happened is my knee, you know, and can't really hop on one leg and try to throw a good punch combination, you know. The injury was the really the downside of that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I twisted my knee, you know, it was very hard to put all my weight on it, you know. Or besides even putting some weight on it, when you throw a right hand, you know, you put all your weight on your right leg, you know, you're sitting on the punch. And that was a very problematic thing to do for me.
When the white towel was thrown in, Yori, what was going through your mind? I mean, were you, okay, this is justified, or were you in the favor of the referee when he continued the fight?
I was in the favor, yeah. I was in the favor of that, you know, Michael Mercante, you know. Like, I'm a fighter, you know, so I didn't want to, for me, when I saw the towel, I was very disappointed, you know, because I wanted to continue.
Your corner, immediately when Arthur Mercante turned around and asked them if they threw it, they said no. Looking back at it now, have you spoken to your corner about throwing in that towel? Because I even though Miguel was ahead on points, I still thought that you had fight left in you. What was their, I mean, and initially, yeah, they were in the right of throwing in the towel because of the knee, but what was the talk like in the locker room between you and your corner?
You know, the thing is I haven't spoke with Joe, my trainer, after the fight. I didn't spoke with my trainers after the fight. They just, you know, they sent me some few texts over my phone, hoping that I'm doing good.
But does that bother you a little bit, Yori, that you haven't spoken to your trainer? I mean, I would have thought you guys would have spoken immediately.
No, you know, I don't know what's going on. It was a lot of drama, you know. You know, after the fight, you know, I came to the locker room. And I was disappointed. There was too much people in my locker room. You know what I mean? And pretty much since then, I was seeing doctors. You know, tomorrow I'm gonna have a ACL surgery and on my knee. And you know, since then I was very busy seeing, you know, knee specialists.
Now I want to go back really quick with you on. After the towel's been thrown in, and after Arthur Mercante decided to let the fight go, what was the thought process for you when he decided to let you continue on fighting against Miguel Cotto?
This is what I wanted to do. You know, that's what I wanted to do. And when he let me do that, I was there. You know, I still tried, you know, to throw punches and be in the game, you know.
Yori, tell us a little bit about the knee. I mean, what state is the knee in at this moment?
Well, I've seen a few doctors. I had an MRI, and I tore meniscus and scratched the ligament, you know, and. The injury that I had, it's an old injury, and pretty much all the doctors said that I would need a surgery to fix it because it would never heal by itself. And they actually surprised that with that knee that I went this far, you know.
Well, that's what I was going to ask, Yor, is during the fight, I mean, when did it bother you? Was it the second round, the third round, or was it even before that? Was it walking into the ring? Was it bothering you, or was this just all of a sudden an old injury decided to, you know, uprise again?
My knee was acting funny pretty much throughout the preparation. You know, preparation and other fights too. Sometimes it would happen in the gym, but you know I can't cancel on such a big fight, you know, it's you know, and kind of also learn to live with injuries. You know, pretty much all of the professional athletes, you kind of learn how to day to day, you know, your body. You know, in the fight, you know, besides the actual slip, you know, there was also a few photographers was always always on my way. You know, like anytime I was moving around the ring, I just keep bumping into these cameras, you know. But the actual when I twist my knee, it was actual when I slipped. It was I don't know, 7th round.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a real bad slip. And then again in Miguel's corner, I was again slipped. So it was not a good bad night in terms of injuries.
Now that this injury has occurred again for yourself with the knee, is this a minor setback or a major setback? Meaning, in the major setback, that will this be the last of your reforming? Will we see you get back into the ring? Is that a thought going through your head?
Absolutely. The doctor said that I would need this procedure. The rehab time is the rehabilitation process is very important for this procedure, and it might take up to 6 months. So, you know, I will have time to basically to rest and collect my energies, focus on my studies, and spend time with the family and back to the business, you know.
You know, Yori, you stole a lot of hearts of fans by, you know, rising from the knee injury, staying toe-to-toe with Miguel Cotto. How well have you received it by the fans? You know, I mean, they obviously have been showing their support, and they have been showing, you know, how much their appreciation was for you to do that. Did you think that was going to happen? Did you feel that some people were not going to give you the props that was deserved to you?
I didn't expect that, but it was, it was a good, even though it was not successful night for me, but it was somewhat successful in that meaning, you know. Like, even for example, I was walking after the ring to my locker room, you know, and I was kind of limping, and I've seen like hundreds of Puerto Rican fans, you know, they were screaming something, they're waving, and I didn't know how to react because I didn't know how they were supporting, because I was a little bit still out of, you know what I mean, like right after the fight, I didn't know what's going on. Are they attacking me, or are they supporting, or are they waving Puerto Rican flags in my face? But now back, I'm looking back, it's actually like, it's pretty cool, you know. The Puerto Rican fans a great boxing fans, you know, and it was cool. Great to get them, you know, I don't know, approval or support.
Well, I think you've gotten everybody's approval and support, Yori, for doing that. You know, seeing that some fighters have taken other routes in continuing, you know, even continuing with a bum knee that you had. You know, you were going to have your critics that were going to say, you know, it wasn't the smartest thing to do, but it was definitely the valiant thing to do as a warrior.
Yeah. So, you understand me.
Hey, Yori, hey, thank you very much, brother. I really appreciate
it. Thank you very much for having me on the show.
All right, brother. Okay. You take it easy. And keep us updated on that knee.
Yeah, definitely. I'll let you know. Tomorrow, 7:30, is going to be the start of the surgery, and I'll know what's up after.
Okay, brother. Can't wait for you to get back into the ring, champ.
Thank you. Thank you, sir. Do well.
Bye-bye.
Well, there you go. You know, he's going to go into surgery. Rocky Martinez is having a lot of problems calling in. He can't get through. So, Z, if you want to go ahead, and you can either stay on the line and keep listening, Z, or because we're – and Z is the Leaving the Rings translator, and she does a great, fantastic job. So I thank you, Z, for being very patient. But he's not going to be on. So they're letting us know right now. He can't get through. So And we're running out of time. We're going to have Alfredo Angulo call in, and he's going to be on with his translator.
All right, no problem then.
Thank
but like
you,
always, Z comes through, and she, you know, she does her part, and she's fantastic in doing translation. So as always, Z, thank you very much, the lovely Z.
Have fun, guys. Bye.
Thank you. So okay, let's go real back really really quick, Strikeheart. You know, he's going to surgery. I know there were some fight fans there were questioning whether or not that if this was a fake bum knee, was he pretending he was limping? Because at one moment he was limping, another moment he wasn't. I kind of find it hard to believe. It didn't seem in his character to do such a thing in the past, you know, for him to do any of that. So
no, yeah, it would be an awfully strange thing for him to do tactically speaking, since I think it was pretty much a consensus that his biggest advantage was his legs.
His legs, exactly.
It's not like he could just stand there and feign an injury to his knee and then knock out Miguel Cotto or even hurt him with one punch. That was never anything anybody thought was going to happen. So that would be a little bit strange and ridiculous to think that.
But you know, man, I mean, that's the way it is, you know, when it comes to fight fans and stuff. If you're rooting for the guy and you see that it's not going the way that you made a prediction, the way you wanted it to be, obviously you're going to get upset and you're going to question the integrity of the fighter and you're going to question the heart of the fighter, because, you know, for the past recent fighters right now have not followed through. They've either stayed on the stool or they've leaped out of the ring. So fight fans in a lot of ways are very skeptical of what's going to happen, or if it's any truth of what's behind that's visual, you know, for them that they're seeing. So that there with the Yori Foreman, but like I said, there was nothing there to really question him faking anything, because it just was really out of character. And
let me just say too, he would have had to been setting this up for a long time, because he was wearing the same brace on the same knee in his fight with Daniel Santos. So he'd have to be thinking that far ahead. All right, I'm going to wear a knee brace in the fight with Daniel Santos. Then in my next fight, I'm going to fake a knee injury with that knee. No, that did not happen. That's crazy.
And he was fighting, guys. That's the thing you got to remember. He was fighting for the keep, to retain his WBA strap. And the fight was stopped on the ninth round. It was stopped on a TKO. And just the other factor you got to look into is if he was pretending and faking and the towel was thrown in, he could have protested against Arthur Mercanti's decision in letting the fight continue. Now, some people are saying very controversial. The fight should have been stopped immediately after the corner threw in the towel. Strike, I'm going to go really quick with your thoughts. The lines are open at 347-215-7598. You want to try to call in right now, because it looks like everybody else is having problems calling in. But you can't call in right now and live on Leave It in the Ring, BoxingScene.com's official radio show. So go ahead, Strike. I know you have a lot to say about it, man. What is your take? You agree with Arthur Mercanti? Do you agree with him like a lot of fight fans agree on him disregarding the towel being thrown in by that corner? And remember, the corner after they backtracked it, saying they didn't throw it in. They didn't even know where the towel came from. Go ahead.
There's not even one single piece of me that agrees with Arthur Mercanti's decision. Not at all. I felt like, you know, as a professional, he really lost it in there. I think he allowed his emotions to become involved in his refereeing, which is obviously like rule number one when you're refereeing, is you should be neutral and fair to both fighters. I thought that he really wanted that fight to continue personally, and rather than adhere to what Yuri Foreman's corner and the ring doctor both were saying, stop the fight, for good reason, he said, you know what, no, clear the ring, get out.
But he wasn't getting beat up, though, Strike. I mean, come on, man. I mean, listen, this is the thing is here.
Okay,
what you're saying. But the guy was fighting. I mean, this is for his title. I mean,
it is for his title. But
his corner did throw in the towel. And you're absolutely right. His leg was hurting and stuff. But he wasn't getting a one-sided beating. I mean, he wasn't getting beaten up. I mean, not to a pulp.
This is the thing. When you're a referee, not only should you be neutral to both fighters, but you should know who you're dealing with inside the ring. you should know a little bit about the fighters that you're about to referee a fight for. And if he did know about Yuri Foreman, which I'm sure he did, he would know that a Yuri Foreman with one leg is not going to be able to beat a Miguel Cotto. It's impossible. And Yuri Foreman did start to take lots of punishment, which is why the corner threw in the towel. It's not like they threw it in after he fell over. They gave him some time to see if his leg would come back a little bit and he could move around, and it didn't happen. And he was standing in front of Cotto taking punishment. And rather than allow a fight to continue for no reason other than just to have it be inevitably ending the way it did anyway, they wanted to save their fighter from any punishment. He was going to lose. There's no way. If it's a guy like, you know, Arthur Abraham, you allow him to fight with a broken jaw, people would have allowed that fight to continue probably even if it wasn't in Germany. Let's just make that a leg injury. You're going to allow him to fight on because you know that he can. His corner wouldn't throw in the towel because he can end the fight with one punch. Yuri Foreman can't do that. He's hopelessly outmatched at a point in the, when he's fighting a guy with a huge punch, you know, that wasn't going to be able to land for any other reason other than that Yuri Foreman had no legs. And Arthur McCanty Jr. is not exactly a guy with a squeaky clean record on stuff like this. You know, he had a guy die on him in a fight which should have been stopped about 10 years ago. Betsevin Scotland. He got knocked out by George Jones. You know, the fight was not stopped when it should have been.
Right.
He got TKO'd in the last round of the fight, and 6 days later he died. He's had guys like Reggie Green.
But you can't put those fights in similarities because of the
only because of the fact that this is the same guy, and I feel like this is coming from the same place.
It's
Reggie Green's head
place,
bounces
it,
off the bottom
listen,
rope.
Listen,
and
it's at the same place, but it's not the same scenario. That's what I'm trying to say. You know what I mean?
I guess not. I just feel like this is an example of Arthur McCanty not being a referee and being a guy who's sitting on his couch and going, oh, this is ridiculous. You know, because you have a Kermit Cintron fight where this fight is not exactly the result anybody would have wanted. And it was headed in that direction again, and it should have been, though. That's what should have happened. And rather than allow that to happen, he got upset that his fight that he was refereeing was going to be ruined by an incident, and he made it continue. What did we see happen? Yuri Foreman couldn't go anywhere anymore, and he got hit with a huge body shot and got TKO'd. What was the point of that?
Now let me ask you
no
this.
Point.
Was that body shot really, in all honesty, was that the telling of the fight? I think it was nothing had nothing to do with a body shot. It had to do with his knee. It was no longer good. It was gone, and that was it. But going back with Arthur McCanty, you know,
I'm sorry to cut you off, but I just got to say, too, I don't even think Cotto really understood what the hell was going on with Arthur McCanty.
I don't think anybody understood what the hell was going on with Arthur McCanty.
He was standing there, and he was boxing Yuri. He was just trying to continue to win the fight. But he didn't want to hurt Yuri Foreman. He knew what was going on. And he only did that when it became obvious that that was the only way the fight was going to get stopped. He didn't want to hurt Yuri Foreman, but he had to.
Ernesto, brother, what's your take about Arthur McCanty? He decides to, you know, overrule the corner when he threw in the towel. He decided to say, no, I'm going to allow this to continue. Knowing Foreman's knee was no longer good, it was not able to keep him up in balance to continue. And knowing that Foreman had no punch to turn this fight around. What are your thoughts about it? Was it a good call? Was it a terrible call? Strike seems to have it as... This was a pretty much in plain view. It was a dumbass call in Arthur McCandy's point.
Here's my thinking. Here's the thinking along the lines of this. Now, if McCandy was doing something out of his own ego, I could understand it. I could totally understand it being a stupid move. But he continually asked, you know, Yuri, are you okay? Can you continue on? He asked him specifically twice, and each time. Yuri said, okay, yeah, I can. Now, here's the thing. Now, if it had been a fight where Yuri was still a prospect, Yuri was still trying to make a name for himself, he holds a belt, and I do take into account the fact that Mercanni said specifically, I don't want you to go out like this, champ. I don't want you to go out this way, champ. And I respect that. I that's something that we, you know, as boxing fans, really want to clamor and see is a warrior try his best to do his best and give him everything.
Shouldn't that be the kind of language that comes from Yuri Foreman's corner, though? As a referee, you should be able to ask a fighter, can you continue? You shouldn't be giving the fighter advice. At that point, you've now crossed the line. In my opinion, that's way overstepping what you're supposed to be doing as a referee.
Here's the thing, and from what we've heard, throwing in a towel does not stop the fight. And Mercanni did exactly what he said he was going to do. He didn't stop it. When the corner had his chance in between those two rounds, they could have told him, look, Yuri cannot go on, Arthur. When Mercanni Jr. came over and he asked specifically who threw in that towel, right then and there, that could have been their opportunity to say, look, Yuri cannot go on. This fight needs to be stopped. Look at his knee. And then they could have reassessed it. At the time that the towel was thrown in, you know, it makes sense that the rule's in place that, you know, the ref doesn't automatically have to stop the fight simply because what if someone, you know, from the opposite corner, just throwing it out there, what if someone from the opposite corner says, okay, go over there and go throw it in the towel? You know,
I'm pretty sure, though, in that case, that unless everybody drove home, that they would then continue the fight or disqualify the other fighter. But, I mean, the rules don't – I always was under the impression that you throw in the towel and unless something crazy like that happened, that was the end of the fight. The referee would listen to the wishes of the corner and the ring doctor and end the fight. But we've seen it, too, where there's a 10 count against Kermit Cintron, and the fight's allowed to continue in that case, too. What do the rules even mean anymore?
But that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, that's a completely
different thing.
Right.
Not to me.
It's common knowledge that you throw in the towel, and that's 99.9% of the time, that's the end of the fight. And
but
in
Justin,
this fight,
that's not
there's
the
nothing
rule,
out
listen,
of the ordinary.
Listen,
it's not as
look,
though Yuri
look.
Foreman was doing well, and the towel just came in. He suffered
know,
a serious
look,
injury.
Look. But the thing is this, is that Arthur Mercanni decided to exercise the rules that have been, you know, implemented by the commission. You know what I'm saying? He exercised his right of continuing something. Where Curtis the Troll was completely different. There was no rule. There was nothing in the rule that said, you know, it's KO. No. There was confusion in that fight.
That was an error in the ref's judgment. When he determined that Kermit went from a knockout to a headbutt, when he took the advice of Kermit and said that there was a headbutt, that was his mistake. Now, segue
I just
back
feel
to
like that. Arthur Mercanni has had a track record, not just this instance or one other one, of being a little bit not stopping fights on time. He's had a track record of that.
Wait a minute. But this
it's not like this situation is
you
any
cannot,
different.
No,
than,
you cannot take that one singular instance and throw it into his whole career because he gave Yuri every opportunity to say, you know what, I cannot continue. He kept asking him. Now,
but there's
if he
a reason why
him,
the fighter never gets to make that kind of decision for himself. It's because most of the time, the fighter is going to continue on fighting regardless of what situation.
You don't know that. Wait a minute. No. You don't know that. I mean, there have been plenty of instances where fighters have stopped simply because they don't want to take no more. I mean, far less a situation that Yuri was in. I mean, we've seen guys like Oscelino Freitas, Victor Ortiz. I mean, not from injury, but from being, you know, from being shellacked the way they are. I mean, it's happened before, so it's not like he's sitting there and saying, okay, well, you know what, I'm just going to do this right now. I mean, he gave Yuri every opportunity to say, you know what, my knee is fucked up. I cannot continue. I cannot go on. I need to stop it right now. And a lot of a guy that
isn't a household name that is fighting to gain respect from the general public, fighting a huge guy in Miguel Cotto, to say, you know what, I can't fight anymore. I just don't think that you're going to see Yuri Foreman do that. But the fight absolutely should have been stopped. And to me, the Victor Ortiz situation was just a little bit
more
serious.
I don't think
serious.
It should have been stop strike. I mean, I got this is what I think about it.
You know what? Here's what I think, Dave.
What would have been different? I want just both of you guys to answer this to me, though. What would have been different if it wasn't stopped? What would have been different? I just don't see it. Was there any chance for Yuri Foreman to win that fight? I don't think there was.
But isn't he the champ? Don't you have to give the champ every opportunity to defend his belt?
I think his opportunity was gone when it became obvious that his knee was not going to get better in that fight.
That's your opinion. You're not basing
right.
it off
what's
of
what's yours,
champ.
Though? Was his knee going to get better at some point?
You
I don't think
know
so.
That. You don't know that until you actually play out.
Well, he's getting surgery on it, so it must be pretty fucked up.
You don't know that until you're actually playing out the scenario at all. And what you're doing is you're taking his wishes out of the equation altogether. And that's not fair. You've got to give the champ every opportunity to defend his belt. And Mercanni did. Bottom line.
Right. I don't want to keep beating a dead horse, but Mercanni has given people the chance to where they've been dead before. So I just don't feel like he's the most qualified guy to be giving people
every
chance.
But look, like, this is the thing, man. This is where it's what you – I guess you could kind of put that old saying. It's a double-ended sword, okay? No matter what, regardless, every ref has made bad calls. Every ref hasn't been in bad situations. You can't hold Arthur Mercanni's bad decision, which is, you know, it's no excuse for somebody's life to be taken away, but it could have been any ref. It could have been in any situation. Those are two different, completely different situations where Arthur Mercanni decided to say, hey, I'm going to allow the champion who was fighting for his title, which was a WBA strap, you know, say, hey, I'm going to allow him to continue because it was off of a knee, where we've seen guys get cuts, you know, and they continue fighting. So to me, it's but what your preference is, you know what I mean?
I'm gonna say one more thing then, because
let me finish real quick, because you asked the question. You said what outcome could have came out of it. Well, that's just it. Ernesto hit it right on the nose right there. He said we don't know. That's why it continued. We don't know whether if he had him come from behind punch. Yes, he does have a big punch ratio, but did we all believe he was going to drop a Daniel Santos? No. There are certain situations and circumstances we do not have an understanding or – we have to wait for the outcome of it. Now, yeah, did it end with him, you know, it finally being stopped? Did Arthur Mercanni finally see enough of what was happening and said, hey, you know what, this kid's not going to do any better. His knee is out of it. It keeps going under him. Yeah, but the
– Now, here's the thing, Dave, too. Now, if Mercanni was the masochist like some believe, he would have tried to count with Yuri, because it was a body shot that dropped him. He would have continued to count, and knowing Yuri, he probably would have got up. Now, if Mercanni was the masochist that we're laying him out to be, I mean, he would have let that fight continue had Yuri gotten up. But the moment he saw the body shot, the moment he saw the look in Yuri's face, he said, "You know what? This kid is indeed have had enough." But at that time that it happened.
Hold on, right?
I'm sorry. I feel emotional about the situation. So
I know that, but you gotta. I mean, look, you ask.
I don't have to give Arthur Mercanni Jr. anything because
we're not saying give Arthur, but you gotta allow us to speak
like
too.
That's fine. Go ahead.
If Yuri says, "I want to continue on," what are you gonna do? What if you're Mercanni and you sit there and you say, "I want to continue on," and you in your head. You know, okay, I don't know his knee. I'm not going to let you do it, champ. Then what happens then? I mean, Mercanni's going to get flack for that, saying, you know, Yuri said he wanted to continue on.
Safety first,
right?
Man. If we allowed every fighter to continue who wanted to when they got stopped, we'd have a lot more dead fighters.
Listen, this is the problem is that there is no right way or wrong way in it, and fortunately, this is a sport, man. It's a blood sport, you know what I mean? And you're going to have good calls, you're going to have bad calls. It's one of those things that you agree with it or you don't agree with it, you know, where we're not really sure what could be the outcome of it. You know, there have been freak accidents in boxing like any other sport, but I understand where you're coming from, Strikecar. I do.
The other situation I wanted to bring up real quick, I mean, that's why I've been cutting in the last few minutes, because I kind of have to lay it out, because you guys, you're arguing with me a little bit about Mercanni's track record. There was
really
a fight
really quick
with Cornell Whitaker.
We got our next guest on the line.
Okay.
Really quick. All right. So go ahead, really fast.
Okay. Pernell Whitaker, he was hitting a guy, a Hurtado, few years before the guy who died. He hit him with, 10 or 15 unanswered punches, and the whole announce team was saying, this fight should be stopped, this fight should be stopped. And everybody had, was making comments after that fight that he allowed it to go on for too long. It's happened to him several times. This isn't the first time people are saying, why was he allowing a fight to go on?
You know what? I'm gonna go back with that one, Strike, because you know what? I watched that fight. I was there. It was live, okay? But I think we got our next guest on the line. Let me make sure. This may not be. But area code 909, do we got Alfredo Angulo on the line with us? Hello? Alfredo Angulo? Hi, how you doing?
Good.
El perro. ¿Qué pasó? ¿Cómo estás, primo?
Bien, bien, ¿y tú?
Bien, bien, nomás aquí en el radio, hablando de boxeo. All right, we got Alfredo Angulo, El Perro, who's got a fight coming up with Joaquin Azalin, July 17th at the Agua Caliente Casino in Rancho Mirage, California. Last time we seen him, he was in the ring with Joel Julio, stopping him in the 11th round with a beautiful overhand right. Ernesto, I'm going to let you go really quick, man, and interview El Perro first. So, Alfredo, nosotros vamos a hablar en inglés. And I believe he has his own translator on the line, Ernesto.
Is Tanya on the line?
Tanya's on the line, yes.
Hi, Tanya. It's Ernie.
Oh, hi, Ernie.
Hey, when are you going to come pick up the stuff?
¿Cuándo se recogen las cosas, Ernie?
Oh, man. I'll hit you guys up later. My first question to Pedro is this. You brought in a conditioning coach, Daryl Hudson. Why don't you elaborate a little bit on what Daryl has meant to this camp? I've heard some stories. I heard some incredible stories about how good a shape you're in right now. And I just wanted you to kind of elaborate on what's going on in there.
He works very good. He works me out very hard, and that's how I like it. And we're obtaining the results that we wanted from him.
So, are you expecting to be more athletic in the ring as a result of Daryl now being on board with you?
Estamos usando un poco más las piernas y creo que se está viendo más. Estamos, gracias al trabajo de Daryl, estamos creo, moviendo un poco más la cabeza.
Yes, we're using our legs a little bit more and more head movement, thanks to Daryl.
Un poco más de rapidez.
And a little bit more of speed with my hands.
Now, I've been to the camp where into Chris Areola's camp, and as you know, Chris Areola also uses Daryl Hudson, and some of the exercises he's done while I've been there have just been mind blowing. You care to describe one of the exercises that Daryl has you going through that you've never done before?
Hay muchos ejercicios que Daryl hace conmigo que ya los conocía, los practiqué durante 4 años en el Comité Olímpico.
There's a lot of exercises that Daryl does with me, and I used to practice them when I was in the in Mexico in the Olympics.
But I just stopped doing them
because we had someone else to do them with.
Y aquí hoy que agarramos. Estamos trabajando con él.
And now that we have Daryl. What I could tell you is that I have never done the stretchments he makes me do.
How's he meshed? How's he gotten along with Clemente? Because I know that when Daryl's with Chris Areola, him and Henry work well together. Does Daryl and Clemente also work well together?
Yes.
Yes.
Daryl había de primera había venido como llegó como como a prueba por decirlo así.
Yes, well, first of all, Daryl was on the test like for a week.
A ver cómo cómo era su trabajo.
To see how his work, he was showing his work for a week.
Ya viste cómo fue conmigo, le dije que todo estaba bien, que se había entendido bien perfectamente con Clemente.
And then Gary contacted Alfredo, and then he said he was fine because Clemente and Daryl got along very good, and Alfredo liked his work, so they kept
well,
him.
I venture to say you're going to continue on with Daryl even after this fight.
¿Vas a continuar con Daryl después de esta pelea?
Si todo sigue como hasta ahorita, parece que sí.
If everything goes along the way it is right now, then I hope it is.
Hey, you know, Ernie, El Perro is my golfing partner here. And we've been out golfing. We went out once there one time. El Perro, remember that? We went out golfing. And, you know.
Where?
Over there in Palm Springs. We went to the Trinity.
We got to do this because I play golf too.
Yeah, and we went with Clemente. But, El Perro, I remember asking you a while back, and our other co-host, Gabriel Montoya, had just recently interviewed you and asked you a question. And this question has always kind of puzzled me a little bit. You said a rematch with Kerman Cintron, that you don't care for it because who is Kerman Cintron? My question is, why not go after Kerman Cintron and seal that loss that you had with him?
No, ya dijiste que no le dieras la revancha a Carlos, pero ¿por qué no?
Porque él no se merece que lo... Él es un peleador que no se merece que lo tomen en cuenta por la acción que hizo en su última pelea.
He's a fighter that doesn't deserve to really get attention just because of the thing he did on his last fight with Williams.
Y alguien que le falta el respeto así al boxeo.
And someone that disrespects boxing like that, he doesn't have nothing to do in the ring.
Yo trabajo muy duro para regresarle la credibilidad al boxeo.
If I work so hard to bring back the credibility to boxing,
y para que venga él,
and for him to come like this,
a mostrar algo así, eso no,
to demonstrate something like that, that doesn't go with me.
Now, let me ask you this, though. I mean, you said he doesn't deserve, and you may be right. He a lot of fight fans feel that he has disrespected the sport of boxing, but that's like a hearsay type of thing where whatever fence you decide to land on or be on is up to you. But and you have the right to feel that way. But the credit is he beat you. That's the big credit, though, there.
No.
Does it matter to you, though?
A mí no me importa. Eso es mejor que se vaya con esa mentalidad del boxeo que pedía día que logró algo, ganarle a alguien. Bueno, en el boxeo.
He said it doesn't matter for him, but he'll let him go with that mentality that he actually did something in boxing that he beat.
That's a great
I'd like to I'd like to ask
right.
him you know, Paul Williams didn't really seem to think that Kermit Cintron jumped out of the ring on purpose. What makes Alfredo think that it was him jumping out on purpose?
Ahorita no conocí ni un peleador que por instinto o por reflejo, si sabe que se va a caer, no trate de agarrarse de algo con el pie, con la mano o algo.
Well, he said like in all these years in boxing, he never met someone that doesn't have the instinct or the reflections of when you know that you're going to come out the ring, use your hands to grab yourself from the ropes or something.
Y yo estaba ahí presente en la pelea. Él estaba bien.
I was there present in the fight and he was good.
Él no quiso seguir.
He didn't want to continue in the fight.
La mejor prueba que yo les puedo dar
que
quiere pelear
from a fighter that wants to fight.
La pelea del sábado pasado
it's from this past Saturday fight
Cotto contra
from Cotto and Yuri Foreman.
Yuri Foreman, él realmente estaba lastimado, pero él quiso seguir peleando.
Like Foreman was really hurt, but he still wanted to continue fighting.
Eso right. Es un peleador de...
That's a real boxer.
Would he be interested in fighting either Cotto or Yuri Foreman in the future? And if so, which one first?
Foreman o Cotto en el futuro, ¿y cuál primero?
Estoy interesado en pelear el 17 de julio con el rival que tengo.
Right now, I'm interested in fighting my opponent on July 17th.
Fair enough.
From there, I don't know what's going to happen. I never like to talk more than what I have in front of me. First, I'll resolve the one from 17th.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about it then. What does he really know about his opponent? And without giving too much away, how does he plan to deal with him on the 17th?
¿Cómo piensa trabajar?
Creo que es un gran peleador como los otros oponentes que ha tenido.
I don't know, I just know he's a good fighter like the other rest of opponents I have.
Que tiene un récord algo impresionante como...
I know his record is impressive.
Como el Julio.
Like Joel Julio.
Una sola derrota con Daniel Santos.
Only one loss with Daniel Santos, and he's a great fighter.
Así que yo creo que... Que nos espera una gran pelea. Dicen que le gusta pelear. No lo conozco. Yo nunca lo
So we hope to have a big fight, and they say he likes to fight. So
no
let's see if that happens. And supposedly he doesn't like to run. and we'll see on the July 17 if he likes to fight.
Now, is that the reason why bringing in the conditioning coach is because it seems like that's the only way to really get away from El Perro is to run or in other words, box, try to box, outbox him. That's what Joel Julio tried to do. He tried to follow the map of Kermanson Drone. So is he trying to perfect that and make sure nobody can over-succeed him again and trying to outmaneuver him?
Para nosotros lo trajimos para buscar un poco de velocidad más en las manos.
Well, Daryl was primarily brought to him just to find a little bit more speed in his hands.
Las piernas un poco más rápidas para cerrar.
And his legs a little bit quicker to cut the ring. For the ones that want to box.
Hey, Pedro, you know, really quick, I know you don't like talking about, you know, any fights that are in the future, but in your heart of heart, you know, Miguel Cotto is definitely a warrior, and it sounds like he's a fighter that you respect. And we already know that Miguel Cotto wouldn't join the Puerto Rican diving Olympic crew. Is he a guy that you would like to mix it up? Is he a guy that you would need in order to be in the same pedestal of like a Julio Cesar Chavez? Because the rivalry between Mexico and Puerto Rico is something that's for some reason needed from either country to go to the next level.
Pues, primero que nada, yo respeto. Cotto es uno de los pocos peleadores que yo respeto porque no le gusta hablar.
Actually, Cotto is one of the fighters, one of the least fighters that I respect because he doesn't like to talk. So I like that.
Un gran peleador.
And he's a great fighter.
Y si algún día se llega a México entre él y yo.
And if one day I get that fight between him and I, I think it'll be a magnificent fight
for
two states with the rivalry in boxing because the two states give great fights.
solo sería un gran combate entre Miguel Cotto y el
perro.
So it'll be
a good comeback between Miguel Cotto and el perro.
Y creo que mucha gente estuviera interesada en ese pleito.
And I think a lot of people will be interested in this fight.
And Ernie, you may be able to answer this for him, because I know, Ernie, you've seen a lot of sparring. But there's a rumor that El Perro gave it to Antonio Margarito pretty bad in sparring. Were you there, Ernie, when that happened? And
several times.
Really?
One of the things that I always came across with me and in watching Perro train and spar with the likes of Margarito is that both of those guys, they were great adversaries. You know, they always knew what each other would bring into the ring, and they wouldn't stop. I mean, they would go at it as if they were fighting for real, for the belts, for the purses, everything on the line. And they would give each other as good as they got. And not only that, but at the end of the sparring, they would both, you know, acknowledge each other and realize just what they've undergone. I mean, it's some of the most amazing sparring sessions I've seen have been between Margarito and Perro.
So it goes to Perro. Margarito has made his comeback, you know, and there has, I don't know if there's been any talk, but I know that among the fight fans there's been some talk. Love to see you, Perro, get in with the Tijuana Tornado. Is that a possibility? Is that a match that has been mentioned to you by Gary Shaw? Is it something that you're looking forward to, or are you interested in fighting another countryman?
Yes, Gary mentioned it too. Not to me, but to the press.
Creo yo que tienen que ser grandes batallas siempre entre dos mexicanos porque dejan arriba el ring.
There's a big battle between two Mexicans because they leave everything in the ring.
Pero si se hace pleito solamente el tiempo lo dirá y yo peleo en mi casa son las 154 y quien sea que entre.
But I don't know if the fight gives up, then I'll just wait for it and I'll fight at my house, and they know I'm on 154, and I'll fight whoever.
That brings up an interesting point, Perro. I asked this question at the last press conference that I was at when you just fought Julio. I asked Gary if he now is going to start focusing on you becoming a West Coast, more specifically a Los Angeles fighter. This fight is not necessarily in Los Angeles, but it's close enough to where your Los Angeles base is going to come out and see you fight. Do you feel kind of a satisfaction knowing that your fan base, because I'll be honest with you, for the Julio fight, your crowd and your participation from the fans was just as loud as Areola's. It was just deafening as to how your fans support you out here, specifically in Los Angeles. Do you feel as Gary feels, that it's really important for you to start establishing your audience in Los Angeles?
Okay, todavía le había preguntado a Gary que si se iba a enfocar en pelearte aquí con sus fans y estaba con una pelea a tener también, que si eso importa para ti.
Pues, es importante, pues sí me importa porque aquí es como mi casa aquí en Los Ángeles.
Yes, I do care because I've been doing all my career of boxing here, so I consider Los Angeles my house. But thank God that anywhere I have
spent,
some other state that's been far, I have fans that follow me. And that makes me very happy. That they don't care that they have to fly from one state to another one to see my fight.
I want to throw out a pretty big hypothetical situation, but it is plausible. So ask Alfredo. James Kirkland was actually, he's going to be released from prison October 2nd. Before he had to go away, he was actually supposed to fight on the Pacquiao-Cotto undercard. Hypothetically speaking, since he was a guy who also knocked out Joel Julio in his last fight, if he was able to fight James Kirkland, let's say in Las Vegas, on a Pacquiao Mayweather undercard at the end of this year, how excited about that situation would he be, and what are his thoughts on James Kirkland?
Dice que ahora que vas a James Kirkland en octubre 2, que sí te emocionaría pelear con él en una cartelera de Cotto y Mayweather en Las Vegas.
A mí me emociona pelear con quien sea. Yo no voy a estar cerca.
I get excited with whoever I fight, not just with Kirkland.
Well, let me just ask him then. What are his thoughts on James Kirkland as another guy who fights in the same weight class, who knocked out the same guy he just knocked out? As far as respect goes, how does he rank James Kirkland?
Que aparte del respeto, tú cómo miras a Kirkland, que fue un peleador que noqueó al que tú noqueas también.
Sí, pero tienen que ver que Joel para el pleito de Kirkland no se preparó como para pelearle al perro.
Yes, but you guys have to see the points that Julio didn't get prepared. He didn't train the same as when he fought El Perro, when he actually fought Kirkland. He wasn't really prepared to fight Kirkland. So there was a difference in his training when he fought Perro.
Okay. I don't know if he answered the question about his respect level for Kirkland, though, and would he be interested? I know he doesn't like to think about the future, but would he be interested in fighting James Kirkland, just flat out?
I respect Kirkland because he's a fighter and he likes to fight. And if one day we fight, it'll be an interesting fight because it's two fighters that love to fight. And I think the winner will be whoever has more heart.
Agreed. I think it's one of the best fights in the division to be made, so I would definitely be excited to see that fight myself.
El Perro, I'm definitely going to be out there in Aguacaliente. I'm pretty sure Ernie is going to be out there to witness you. And El Perro, you got to take me down where you get your three-piece suits there, man, so I can sport myself a suit. Because you're always looking sharp, Alfredo. Always looking sharp. Y también, primo, quiero saber, what's the name of the band that estaba ahí last time at the Oriella fight? Porque quiero ir para comprar la CD de la grupo.
The name is Voz de Mando, and is one of the most popular group right now for the Mexicans.
And can I get that on iTunes, or do I need to go to the Ritmo Disco, I think it's called? Is that what it's called, Ernie? Because I know you go there, Ernie, all the time.
Where?
We know you be bumping Los Tigres del Norte and La Mafia.
Me, Tanya, and Pedro had this talk, and I tried to flex my
physical knowledge,
and I got schooled royally bad. I'm not even going to. It's like
Larry Hernandez.
Bueno, el perro, man. Hey, primo, gracias otra vez, man, para tener el tiempo para hablarnos con nosotros. And I can't wait till you get in there with, Asalin. Do your job. Hopefully, you're successful. Angulo, hey, and give the baby a kiss hello, brother, for me. His daughter.
Muchas gracias por tomarnos en cuenta y tener esta entrevista con ellos. Yo estoy muy contento.
He said the other way around. Thank you guys for thinking about him and giving him your time.
Pero dile que ahorita sí le voy a dar el beso a mi hija. No
Nomás que ya cuando cumpla 15 que no me pida que le dé un beso porque vamos a tener problemas él y yo.
But right now, give the kiss to his daughter, but don't ask him that when she turns 15. Because then we're going to have
Okay, man. Okay, Alfredo, I'll talk to you later, brother.
Okay, take care, bro. Okay?
All right. You too. Right. There you go, man. Alfredo. And thank you, Tanya. Thank you so much.
All right, you're welcome. Bye.
Bye-bye. Well, Alfredo Angulo. I got to tell you this, Ernesto, man. If you haven't been on the green with El Perro, I mean, that guy is nonstop.
Is he a good golfer?
You know what? It was his very first time. And I don't know if it was beginner's luck or whatever. I can't remember how many holes, he got and stuff. But the guy just not – he even broke a golfing club. That's how hard the guy swings. Okay? The guy – and he's got good eye coordination. You know, he stays steady. And I know some people are making fun of the way he talks and stuff, but that's the way he talks, man, in person. You know, he's got a really mild type of, temperament about him. You know, he definitely is one of the nicest guys in boxing. And I tell you what, man, on the green, he's pretty vicious there, Ernie. I made fun of him because I was like, damn, this guy, now I know why they call him El Perro. He doesn't stop chasing the ball. Everybody was tired. It was hot, man. It was like 104 out there in Palm Springs, right? We're getting cooked, and the rest of us from Clemente and everybody else, we decided to sit in the golf carts and just watch him play. We're drinking. This guy's just running around back and forth like a baby pit bull, man, just chasing the ball. You know, it was hilarious. But
I'm gonna have to partake in one of these golf sessions then.
September we're gonna do it again. I believe we're gonna be having Teddy Atlas out there. We had Ray Boom Boom Mancini and Alfredo and Clemente. I think we're gonna be getting Timothy. Definitely get the rest of us from Leaving the Ring out.
Oh, sounds great.
To play some golf and what it is, it's a fundraiser to fund the Palm Springs gyms out there, which is Coachella. Jim?
Coachella Boxing Club, yeah.
There you go.
Actually, that's my hometown. So.
Yeah, and it's Lee Espinoza who throws it. And, I know Lee's a really good guy, man.
Yep.
And he's the one that has that foundation. So anybody listening, too, if you want to go, you want to attend to it. It is open to the public. You just got to come down and, donate or pay for your entering fee to play. I'm not going to tell you what the price, because I don't even know myself right now, but I can get all the information if you do want to attend to it. It's a really nice place. It's out there in the Trinity in the Palm Springs, like I said, and it's going to be in September. I just don't know the exact date, but I'll have all of that. You can email leavingtheRing@gmail.com and join us, man. And like I said, you can go out there, play some golf, have a couple of beers, talk to the fighters that are going to be out there, and just enjoy the whole day. It's going to be a nice, hot day. September stays pretty warm out there, man.
It does.
Alfredo Angulo definitely answered some questions. It's kind of hard to get anything really out of him, man, because he's just one of those fighters that don't talk a whole lot of shit, but he says just enough to maybe write about or to go like, oh, damn, wait a minute, there's something behind there, man. And he's not one of those fighters I don't even know if Zab Judah you could even say anymore. He's one of those shit talkers. Zab was pretty vocal back in his earlier days. He's kind of calmed down. He got a little Twitter happy for a moment, with Devon Alexander, but he kind of calmed down, settled down a little bit on his in his press conference, Ernie and Justin. So I don't know if you guys want to roll into that and listen to what he had to say about Devon Alexander being on Leave It in the Ring. Should we play that right now?
Most definitely.
Let's go for it, yeah.
You're listening to Leave It in the Ring. You're listening to Leave It in the Ring.
Campaign, 140 is my thing. I'm campaigning 140 pounds. I don't want to hear no questions about 47 and what about this and that. Let's talk for that's what's up.
Hey, Zab, this is David Duenas with Leave It in the Ring Radio. Hey, we had Devon Alexander, and he mentioned to us that he had no interest in fighting you because he said it made no financial sense. What do you think he was trying to say there?
You know what? It's almost like, I don't know your situation as growing up as a kid, but put yourself in a position. You got a schoolyard bully. and he was in the way, you know what I'm saying? And he said, pay up, or you're not going to school, what you going to do? You're going to pay up. So for Devin to tell y'all that Zach Judah is not a financial profit, that's silly. That's silly to say. I mean, we all know it is. It's very much a profit there that he can make. You know, he just don't want to challenge. That's what it is.
No.
But that's way out the back, though.
You know, now, we know that you're the star power name, you know. So if there was to go negotiations, where would it be at? Would it be in St. Louis, or would you want it to be in New York?
No, I would like it to be in St. Louis, because St. Louis is one of my third homes. You know what I mean? So definitely, I would love for it to be in St. Louis. You know, the people of St. Louis need to get that, that fly-by-night champion out of here. You know what I mean? That's what he is. I mean, you know, he said, I'm not a financial. I don't even know what he is. He's a fly-by-night champion, you know?
You know, man, I remember back in the day when you had compared yourself to David Banner, and you said that you had the Incredible Hulk in you. You still got that in you?
Come on, baby. When I get mad, I turn green.
Now, when it comes to the 140 division, has anybody in that division, in all honesty, brother, has anybody in that division impressed you? Has anybody really caught your eye and go, okay, this guy can probably bring back the old Zab, or nah, there's nothing there right now, really, honestly, that's getting you all boiled up and ready to go?
No, I mean, you know what? Like I said, I'm not into bashing fighters. I love fighters, but they work just hard as I do to get what they got to get and to get to where they're at. And, yes, there's a lot of talented fighters in 120 pounds, you know what I mean? That's one of the main reasons for me coming back to this weight class, because it is one of the most exciting weight classes in boxing, or it's going to be one of the most exciting weight classes in boxing. And they are, you know, Americana has good speed and power, you know what I mean? I mean, he's doing good. I mean, Devin's a young peanut that's starting to spur flowers now. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Devin is coming up pretty good. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, you got guys like Urango and Timothy Bradley. He's a fast fighter with good speed and good power. I mean, you got to get up to him. I mean, he's doing good. This is why I want to come in his weight class and campaign myself with these type of fighters. You know what I'm saying? So I can show y'all that I am the best super junior that y'all know me to be.
Thank you, brother. Can't wait for your comeback.
Now, how much in play, honestly, man, do we take Zab serious? I mean, I'm going to go with Justin real quick. How much of it do you think we need to take serious of his comeback? Is it one of those comebacks where he plays a little bit, he gives a little bit, what you've seen him in the past, and then he just kind of falls off the chart? Is he serious about getting in with any of the named players right now at 140?
I think we have to be skeptical about that. He's shown over the past decade that he's not really mentally in. I'll give him a little bit more credit. The past half decade, that he's not really mentally in the sport, or at least he hasn't been. So until he shows that he's serious about it, I'm not going to take it too serious. But you know, a fight with Santa Cruz as a return to 140 isn't actually all that bad. I think it's a pretty good match for him to return to the division after all this time. As far as do I see him beating Amir Khan, Timothy Bradley, Devin Alexander, Marcus Maidana, no, I don't. But, you know, we'll see. It's something that we'll just have to wait and find out. Santa Cruz is a nice first step in that direction, and if he actually does take it seriously, which he hasn't in a while, we might all be surprised at how much he has left. The first thing I'm curious about is how easily he can even make the weight. That's like obstacle number one in my mind.
Right.
This is a fighter who has not weighed 140 pounds since 2003. You
right.
Know, so, and as much as he wants to say he's going to be 140 pounds, I mean, simple math just shows that, you know, I mean, have we not learned our lesson with the De La Hoya fiasco thinking he can get to 147, you know?
Right. And you know, I think by him going in with Santa Cruz and you know what, Ern, I might be wrong about this, but I'm not really sure if that fight's going to be at 140. I think it's going to be at like 142, 143.
Yeah.
You know,
I've seen Santa Cruz in the gym. I've seen him at Maywood. I know he's been around the local gyms trying to get work in, and I'll venture to say this: he was nowhere near 140, near mm-hmm. close to 140. So, I mean,
you know, while it's a good step for Zab, I think we're still looking at a, you know, basically a career lightweight in Santa Cruz. You know, it's one of those things that he didn't really punch much to begin with. So there, I mean, while it's a good step, it's good work. I'm not sure how much of a threat Santa Cruz is going to be. And considering the kid's been out of a gym and he's been, you know, in and out with trainers, you know, I know he had gotten, I think he went back with his dad for a little bit, but I'm not even currently sure who's training him right now, to be honest with you. You know, it used to be, it used to be Rudy Hernandez, and, you know, and that just, you know, it stopped. Or, Santa Cruz was, you know, he was a viable lightweight. I clearly think he beat Casamayor, but, you know, since then his career's been kind of in disarray. And,
right.
You know, I don't know if this is such a great gauge for Zab to see if he belongs with the elite.
And him calling, Devon Alexander a peanut in the game right now, you know, well, that peanut can crack. That's one thing that we know for sure for Devon Alexander does. But let me ask you this, you know, where Devon Alexander saying his financially makes no sense for him, what's your thoughts about that? You think that does it make financial good reasoning for Devon Alexander to maybe sucker in Zab Judah at 140? Or is it the reason why Alexander kind of put that in the mark was because the ink probably won't be signed because the Zab probably won't be able to make 140.
Well, I mean, you know, this fight's going to go a long ways as to seeing just, you know, where Zab stands as far as being able to make the weight. I'm not sure if it's viable that, you know, this out of this fight, because I'm assuming he's going to win because I don't see, you know, Santa Cruz posing much of a threat. But, you know, I don't know how much we're going to gain out of this in seeing that whether, you know, Zab is back or not. And you know, the one thing I will say, and as fleeting as it is, as dim as it is Zab does still have a name. I mean, his name is infamous with fights that you see on TV quite often. So, I mean, you know, a Zab Judah fight with Devon Alexander in the Lou, you know, can, I guess, generate sales and can generate some interest simply because, you know, if Zab goes back to the scene of the crime where he beat Corey Spinks for Corey Spinks' title, you know, there's some payback, you know, interest in that. And plus, you know, the Lou's got such a bright young star in Devon, you know, that they're going to want to see him put on a performance and a display, much like what they saw against Urango.
You know, I mean, going back to St. Louis, which Zab Judah already said he wouldn't have a problem doing, to me, if St. Louis was looking for a mega fight like they did, I mean, they made the Corey Spinks and Zab Judah fight number, the rematch, just seem like one of the decade fights of the year. You know what I mean? One of those type of fights,
yeah.
You know? And having Zab go down there, to me, it makes a lot of financial good reasons to want to do it because if one thing, Zab Judah is not only going to make it entertaining in the ring, but he's going to make it entertaining out of the ring. You know, he's going to have those type of press conferences where he, you know, he can only be tamed for so long. You know, he's like a Ricardo Mayorga. He can only be tamed for so long where his mouth is going to do a lot more jabbing and boxing than the actual hands and his amount that he likes to put in. You know, I mean, unfortunately, like Justin said, you got to kind of be skeptical about him because we've, you know, plenty of writers and you know, I mean, Zab's going to disagree, but hey, the proof is in the pudding, brother. You got to watch yourself on film. You've been called a front runner for a reason. You know, 3 to 4 rounds, you get the greatness that everybody, that Mac Killerman used to hoot about all the time for 3 rounds. But after those 3-4 rounds, where we get the normal the normal guy that didn't train enough in the gym, that basically rode off of his great, great talent, and that's all you're going to get now. It's 3-4 spectacular rounds.
Yeah, and I think it goes a long way, you know, towards, you know, really just, you know, kind of disproving the myth that Zab is an elite fighter at any level right now, simply because, I mean, if you look at his, you know, just look at his record, his wins since 2006 are against Edwin Vasquez, Ryan Davis, Ernest Johnson, and Roberto Jimenez. I mean, and out of those, only one person, Roberto Hernandez, who was shocked beyond belief, went the distance. I mean, so, I mean, you got guys that are in the ring with him that should have been, you know, disposed of and dispatched of, and they weren't for whatever reason. And it just goes to show, really, I mean, are we just playing the Zab Judah off of the name of what we, you know, what we had once envisioned the fighter Zab Judah to be? Or does he have anything? You know, does he have anything that's going to pull us in and make this fight intriguing for us? And I don't see it. You know, I don't have that faith in Zab anymore. I used to be a very pro Zab Judah guy, but
yeah,
you know, and it had nothing to do with his mouth. It had nothing to do with his attitude or whatever.
Right.
It's just what he did in the ring. You know, it's just.
Jay Nady may argue with you about that there.
Actually, you know what? I talked to Jay. It's funny because me and my boy Chris, we sat next to Jay for the Castillo Corrales 2 rematch, and we were talking to Jay, and we were talking about Zab, and you know the topic came up because that's what, you know, other than some of the quotes he has, that's what he's most famous for, is what happened with the Zab Judah fight. And we asked him, and he said, one, he doesn't harbor any ill will to Zab. Zab, every time he sees him, repeatedly apologizes for everything that he ever did. He said,
right.
He said, down to earth, and he says, Zab, when he comes to me, he's real humble, he's real respectful, he's, you know, he's always apologizing for, I said, Zab, that's enough, you know, you don't have to apologize no more, you know, I understand. And Jay actually has been probably one of those guys that's really pro-Zab Judah. I mean, you know, and it's kind of refreshing to see that, you know, even in the light of the controversy that happened, you know, he can still, you know, bring that positive attitude towards a guy that, you know, really wanted to kill him.
Yeah, you know, but you know what? To me, Zab is one of those type of cats that runs off of emotions. You know what I'm saying? He's a homeboy. You could tell. He's one of those guys, man. He's a street kid. But the only thing is, don't try to withhold any money when you're playing some dice games with them. You see, well, what happened to that, man? You know what I'm saying? That's that old saying. You can take the kid out of the hood, but you ain't gonna take the hood out of the kid. But let's get realistic, man. Let's get serious. Where does Zab meet with any of those guys? I know you got Amir Khan in the division. You got Marcos Miadana in the division. You got Timothy Bradley. You got Victor Ortiz. You got Devon Alexander. If you threw him in the bag and you were giving Zab Judah any chance among any of these guys that are in the mixture, in the swimming pool of the 140 pool, who could Zab possibly be successful or subpar successful or maybe I'll class them. I'll go right now, Ernie, really quick. First name that I'm going to pull out of the bag, and you're giving your thoughts about it. And, you know, you've had some pretty heavy thoughts about this guy because he did fight on HBO a few backs ago, and you did call him Precious, the Precious Victor Ortiz.
No, I changed it to Costas. I changed it to Costas.
Costas Victor Ortiz. Does Costas Victor Ortiz. Well, I'm going to stick with Vicious, man, because I like Victor. You know?
I know. I was reflecting off of that one fight. And actually, I had some – I can elaborate a little bit, too. I just got off the phone with Terry Trakas, who manages Nate, and he was giving me some basically a synopsis of what Nate's been going through as far as his back is concerned. But getting back to Victor. You know, Victor, talent-wise, I really think he keeps up with Zab. You know, Zab physically is a talented guy. He's always been a talented guy. Mentally, you know, the focus hasn't been there. You know, if Zab sees that, you know, Victor can stay with him punch for punch, speed for speed, footwork for footwork, because Vic's got some impeccable footwork when he wants to.
Right.
You know, I don't see Zab doing it. I mean, honestly, Zab's best chance is to get someone early and clip them really good, you know, and that fits. The one guy that fits that's at the top is, you know, you got to say, is Amir Khan. I mean, we've seen Khan not only just knocked out with Prescott, but he's also been dropped prior to that. You know, he's been dropped in prior fights. I want to say Michael Gomez, I think, might have dropped him. I'm trying to think back. But I know, yeah, I think it was Michael Gomez when he was dropped. And you know, there's something there that's a cause for alarm. And Zab, while he was never the puncher at 147, I think he only had 3 knockouts in his reign at 147, he was a viable puncher at 140.
Right.
You know, and they always say that the last thing to go is your punch. So I mean, that would be an intriguing fight to see Judah versus. You guys are going to be in there for the long haul. You got a guy who's going to grind out. It's tough to pick him against any of the guys. I mean, I would even have a tough time picking him against guys like Lamont Peterson.
You know what? That's a good name, but Lamont Peterson is a completely different style in terms of, I would give Victor, let me put it this way. I agree with you. I would give Victor a much more of a punching chance than Lamont Peterson, you know. But I do like Lamont Peterson's boxing skill. I think just Lamont Peterson at the moment when he fought Timothy, he decided to do the complete wrong game plan. He let the machismo kind of sink in a little bit too much in that fight, you know. And you know what I'm talking about, right? And
I do. He told us on the radio too. He was telling us he was going to do that, and I didn't believe him, but he did it.
he did it anyways. But this is the thing, though. This is what I was thinking here is Justin and Ernie was that left uppercut that Zab throws is a thing of.
Uh oh, Dave, are you there? Hello? Ernie, are you there? No. Well, I don't know if we're still on the air, but Strikehearts is here. And Strikehearts is going to give his opinion on the Zab Judah versus Victor Ortiz fight. And I have to say that I believe Zab Judah would be stopped by Victor Ortiz in a hypothetical matchup late. But Zab Judah, as Ernie and Dave were both saying, has a chance to come out up front and do some work. Victor has been pretty cautious in his past few outings. So it's not impossible to imagine that maybe Zab could use his legs for the first three or four rounds and try and get Victor out of the fight as early as possible. But I think that the fight that I would want to see as far as a top 10 guy at 140 for Zab Judah, should he show that he's even deserving of a top 10 fight, would be between he and Paulie Malignaggi. So the reason that for that being is Malignaggi is now at a point where we're not exactly sure what his legs are like and how much he can actually do all that beautiful legwork that he has been famous for all these years. And I think that maybe Zab Judah would be able to stay inside and put enough hurt on him that it could actually turn out to be an interesting fight. Another matchup that might be favorable to Zab Judah at 140 would be against Andy Kotelnik. Just because of the style that Kotelnik brings in, a speed guy, a power at 140, as Ernie said, guy, might be able to do pretty well with Kotelnik too and try and employ the same tactic to get him out of the fight as early as possible. Who else? I think, Timothy Bradley would be a disaster because Timothy Bradley in a lot of ways is kind of representing a younger and more determined version of Zab, who seems to be just a tad more serious, and that's an understatement. Amir Khan, I don't think he stands much of a chance with the new and improved Amir Khan, who I don't think would be at all interested in engaging in a fight for the first 6 to 7 rounds. I think that he would force that fight as deep as he could and try and maybe go for a late knockout on Zab Judah. Devin Alexander, that's the fight that's been mentioned, and I know we've talked about it on the air before, but Devin Alexander would probably be able to, I would say, stop Zab Judah. It's got the St. Louis angle to it, two southpaws going at it, and Devin Alexander would be well served by that matchup. It would make him, believe it would make him a household name. The last one, I guess we could do Marcos Maidana, and I think that would be probably of all the fights, actually, if I'm just looking at styles, I think that would be the worst one for Zab because he wouldn't be able to try and get Maidana out early, that's for sure. You got to be a fool to try and do that. We saw what would happen when Victor Ortiz employed that kind of tactic. So Zab couldn't do that. You got to try and take Maidana maybe a little bit deeper in the fight. And we know that Zab is that's not his forte. So I think that he'd be, of all the guys, just because of styles, most outmatched and outclassed by a guy who we don't really put that word with, class, Maidana.
But, you know, seeing as how I'm not in control of the switchboard, unless Dave comes back on and does his little clickety-clack with the switchboard, I might just have to say that this is Strikeheart saying, if it's not boxing, then I don't care. And hopefully, you know, the technical problems we're experiencing right now don't surface again next week. But it looks like that I'm going to have to call this one done. I'm going to do what Arthur McCanty should have done, and I'm stopping this one where it's supposed to stop. All right. Peace.
Okay, man, we're back on live again. I apologize. They're giving us a lot of problems. I don't know what it is. So
is it Block Talk Radio?
It is Block Talk Radio. They dropped us, and it dropped everything. It dropped the switchboard, chat room, everything. But we're on back on live, guys, so apologize if you're in the chat room. We're back on live. I apologize. So if Strike... I tell Strike right now. Call back in, Strike. We're on live again. We got it up and going on Block Talk, okay?
So what do you want to talk about real quick?
I want to go right into what we were discussing, which was, Zab Judah with Victor Ortiz. But let me throw out the name out there for you, Ernie, and let me see what your thoughts on. Because Amirican has always been known to have a suspect chin. But he's got speed, got great boxing skills. He seems to have been... going back to what he originally was, which was a boxer, not a puncher. He had that puncher mentality when he went in with Marcos Miedema, and we saw the results of that. Now, but with Ab, who hasn't had the greatest chin, but seemed when he moving up in weight, it looked like he kind of grew into that chin. Going mm-hmm. back to 140, though, was that questionable. He got dropped early in rounds. He got... completely rocked with Costa Zou. Is that a good fight for him and Amir Khan? Is it a good fight in terms of both guys are a little have question marks over their chinnies that they can really honestly, either way, whoever throws and lands on the pinpoint, on the bullseye, can take mm-hmm. each other out. Is that a good fight for Amir Khan? Or is it too risky for him to want to get in with a guy like Zab Judah?
Well, I think with Amir Khan, I think, you know, Golden Boy and, you know, his management team and the people that they've had in place for Amir have done an excellent job in keeping him, you know, one, pertinent after the Prescott debacle. But two, there's been some really clever matchmaking. I mean, if you look at the list of people from Salida to Kotelnik to Malignaggi, it really hasn't been a single guy you could say punches very well. I mean, I think we're going on four fights where, you know, he's not faced a guy that you would consider a puncher. If a Zab Judah comes into the mix, well, then that all changes, because it's one thing to say Zab at 147 may not have power, but at 140, he definitely showed that he had sting in his punches.
Right.
And while it may not be a good fight for Amir Khan, it'll be a fun fight for the fans. And I think I think that's what should drive that. I mean, I personally don't think that
Khan is quite ready for the elite upper echelon guys like the Alexanders and the Bradleys of the world, you know. But I think this would be a good measure as to how he would handle guy with speed and a guy with firepower, and that's something that I think, you know, the jury's still.
Ah, man, this is, I apologize, man.
I did you here, huh?
You know what, Ernie? I think you're the one that did it, brother. I think they're like, you know what, this guy Ernesto, he's got too much behind the scenes, man. We got to make sure this vato, we got to keep him at bay, man.
Man down, man. They're trying to keep me down, but I'm not going to be stopped, man. This is just the beginning.
I know, man. And
But getting back to the whole Amir Khan thing, you know, it's like, I agree with you. I think the one thing that we do need to see is that while it may not be the best fight for Amir, I think it'll be the best fight for the fans to see how he measures against a guy who can pack a punch. And while Zab's relevance may have came and went, it's still something where there's an intrigue. You know, can Zab make 140? Can Zab still be effective? Can Zab get to Amir Khan's chin? Can Amir get to Zab's chin? You know, and that's something that's intriguing to me.
You know, and I don't want to get too much into the whole Zab Judah, you know.
Yeah, why are we talking about that?
Well, there you go. There's so many other news in boxing. Strike, Justin Strikehart, you on the line with us, brother, or did we lose you too, man? Hopefully we got you still back on the line. You there, Justin?
All right, tag teaming it again, huh?
I know, man. Anyways, but hopefully he calls back in.
Right.
We're having a lot of problems right now, guys. I apologize. You know, we will get it all sorted out for the next week's show. But there's some news. Listen, this is the funny thing is that I got a lot of email because of something that I posted on my Facebook and my Twitter. And some fight fans, and, you know, the thing about us fight fans, we're very emotional about a particular fighter. You know, become I call them fanboys, you know what I mean? You become a major fan. You know, you now have crossed the line of not liking the fighter's skills, but loving the fighter himself because you have,
I have a better phrase for that. It's called nut huggers.
There you go, nut huggers, okay. But so I tweeted out, I put on the Twitter that Manny Pacquiao has just released a new song called I Got 99 Problems and Floyd Mayweather is not one of them. And, man, did I have a fire of Floyd Mayweather fans come at me about it. It was a joke. You know what I mean? I make jokes about particular fighters. And the whole thing I was saying that was because the rumor was that pretty boy Floyd Mayweather is going to go into retirement. And I really didn't fall into that because
–
I thought, you know what, Floyd got a little pissed off that Manny Pacquiao was getting awarded at the Boxing Associations of Writers in New York which Carlos Suarez from Boricua Boxing attended. And got to give you a shout-out, brother. He was out there. But he was getting an award of Decade of the Decade of the Fight or something.
Fighter of the Decade.
There they go. Fighter of the Decade. And I think
so.
Floyd,
deservedly so.
Right. And I think Floyd, you know, kind of felt he was overlooked as a fighter of the decade himself, being that he's, what is it now, 41-0 or 42-0, and he doesn't 41-0 and doesn't have an blemish on his record, and you know, he has stated himself he's the greatest fighter to ever live, better than Sugar Ray Leonard to Sugar Ray Robinson to Muhammad Ali. I thought, you know what, he was going, I'm going to take a little bit away from the luster away from Manny Pacquiao.
Yeah,
I'm going to retire.
That's exactly what it was. I mean, it was at the time that Manny, the spotlight was clearly on Manny for winning the Fighter of the Decade Award. The BWAA is the Writers Association Awards that they have every year. And it's, you know, kind of a big deal within the boxing media. You know, I got to think that Floyd, you know, saw this and said, you know what, I'm gonna throw some salt into the game. And it, you know what, I think it really does go to show just how good of a showman Floyd is, because he will do whatever it takes to make sure that his name is always going to stay in the spotlight, even when it's not in the spotlight. And you know, either you really like it or you really hate it. And I know a lot of people in the media, yeah, that I've gotten into very heated debates with, you know, really, really hate it. I tend not to mind it. I think my mentality started way back in that when he said, you know, specifically that he was going after the big fights, I knew where he was going with this. I knew that he wanted, you know, the Hattons and the De La Hoyas, and he didn't necessarily want to sit there and fight everybody, you know, a murderer's row of opponents that we as fans wanted to see. So given that, I understood, and I you know, I was fine with that. I understood, you know, because in the end, boxing is a profession in this guy's career, and you've got to, you know, optimize that. And I understood that, and I respected that. And I think once I got to that point, you know, my appreciation of Floyd became a lot better than some others. You know, it's just, he is what he is. And if you don't like it, you're gonna rail hard against it. But if you do, you know, some of these things doesn't, you know, really doesn't faze, you know, faze you as a fan. And this was one of those instances. It's typical me on Floyd, me. It is. Anybody who doesn't think that is kidding themselves, even the diehard Floyd fan.
Hey, man, and you know what? I mean, I don't even get mad that Floyd did. I actually like that Floyd has a sense of humor and going, like, you know, it's like that typical, I'm going to throw a wrench into the party. You know, I'm going to go crash the party. And that's what he did, you know, and I thought it was hilarious. Is he going to retire? No, I don't think he is. You know what? If anything, let me say this, and I did put this on Twitter too, and there were some fight fans that didn't like what I said, because during the fight of the Miguel Cotto fighting Yuri Foreman, he was, you know, doing – Miguel Cotto was doing his thing. But I said, how many of us believe right now, because I'm one of the believers, that Floyd Mayweather is going to pick Miguel Cotto first before getting in with Manny Pacquiao?
That's an interesting point of view, but see, here's the thing. Does Bob allow
strike.
That?
Well, yeah, and I can hear strike now.
Bob allow that.
Oh, you know, I'm here, because last time you said, hey, strike, and I was talking and nothing happened. I was talking to dead air. But I wouldn't be surprised if he went after Cotto first.
That's a good question right now that Ernie said, though. Would Bob Arum
allow
that?
Bob Arum would totally allow it. I don't think he would avoid that fight at all. But I do think that the fight fans probably, you know, there would be a fair amount of backlash should that fight be made.
Honestly, I think Bob would keep Cotto within his own ranks, because they're there's still a stable of opponents that he can, you know, use to go, you know, keep Cotto's career going within his own promotional firm. You know, it's so I don't know. I don't know if Bob would allow that, much like, you know, Lou wouldn't, you know, Lou didn't you know, kind of segue into a P. Will Sergio Martinez rematch, because he really wanted P. Will to rematch with Kermit after the circumstances that happened in May 8th in Carson. You know, he said, well, why do I want, you know, Martinez to fight him when I got a guy here who should, you know, who deservedly, you know, should get a rematch with P-1, and that's Kermit. You know, it's kind of the same thing. If I've got Manny Pacquiao who's calling you out, why do I need, you know, why do I want you to go ahead and now fight my other fighter, you know, Miguel Cotto? So, I don't know. I don't see Bob, you know, Bob's hatred of Floyd is legendary, and I don't see him catering to Floyd in any way.
Well, you know, his hatred must be led. Oh, wait a minute. Gabriel Montoya is on the line. Let me let Gabe on, because I didn't see him. Gabe, you on the line with us, brother?
Yeah, man, I am.
I'm sorry, man. You know, we've been having so many problems today on the show. We've been dropped off I don't know how many times.
Good luck on the show, Gabe.
Okay. I just want to chime in on the, you know, would Floyd fight Cotto? And I think he would, just because Cotto is still kind of a wounded animal, and I think that's kind of his M.O. It's been a lot of people's M.O., let's be real. You know, Sugar Ray Leonard made a Hall of Fame career out of it. But this is why it won't happen, is because guys will not be able to fight Floyd unless they take a blood test. And if Bob Arum lets one fighter take a blood test, it's going to make Manny Pacquiao look terrible. And it's just not going to happen. So it's just not going to happen.
That is a pretty good point.
You know? And Bob's not going to do anything to line Floyd's pocket.
So basically now, let me ask you guys this now. So basically, Bob is going to withhold great fights for us because of a single test? I mean, come on. I mean, look.
Bob's done it before. Bob's withheld fights from us before. I mean, let's not forget the Golden Boy Top Rank, you know, free.
Right. No, no. What I'm saying, though, yeah. But eventually the Top Rank and De La Hoya little scuffle between these two big ladies in the game of boxing, they finally made up. They finally decided to go out to the stores and buy a, go drink some tea and sat there and
Dave,
had some what?
Dave, it's on still. I mean, when was the last time you saw it?
Yeah, yeah.
When
that's
is the last time
right,
you saw
right.
Fight fans,
everybody put their money together and buy both those guys some Gucci purses. You know, let's send them some roses and tell them, let's get it done and over with. Let's get past this whole testing, which in my opinion, you're I don't know, you're just restricting us of getting some good fights, man.
It's true.
Screw the politics already. Get
it
out of
the promoters the promoters are the ones that don't want this to be a league. It's the fans that want it to be a league because it makes sense because we'd get what we wanted. We wouldn't have to deal with Floyd being really difficult. And to your point earlier, Ernie, I think people confuse the thing with Floyd. You can appreciate how great of a fighter he is for his skill and everything. It's the businessman that drives me insane. It's
I don't know if I can appreciate
that.
I don't know if I can appreciate
his skill.
That
I never asked for. I never cared about him fighting Marquez. Never wanted that fight. If you want to fight a chewed up, do that. But don't tell me it's a pound for pound fight because that fight was bullshit. I wanted him to fight Margarito.
But see, you said appreciate that he's a great fighter. You just mentioned Marquez. You said you didn't want to see that fight. So how could you call him? How could you appreciate a guy calling himself a great fighter when we haven't seen any greatness out of him because he hasn't decided to fight another great fighter that can bring out the greatness.
I think we are giving
him a fighter. He just hasn't done it above 135 pounds.
We all started giving him a little bit more credit, you know, a month or two ago after he beat Shane Mosley.
But that's also the oldest fighter that he's ever fought. I mean, granted, we all said it, you know, it was the fight I wanted. I wanted to see what would happen. But he won't fight a guy that we don't know if he's going to win or not. I mean, we're giving him all the credit for fighting Mosley. We're ignoring the fact that Mosley was a 4-1 underdog, a 38-year-old fighter that hadn't fought in 16 months and was probably not on the juice because he was taking blood tests.
Right.
But let's just be real.
Well, when he was on the juice, though, he lost anyway, in my opinion. But
right.
I give him a lot of credit. I thought he would win the fight, but I did give Shane Mosley a pretty good chance, and he showed that he deserved to be given a pretty good chance to win the fight. He did well early, and really he just fell apart. But I was criticizing Floyd a lot more than I have been after that fight. Let's just put it that way.
Save for two punches,
though. His brilliance in terms of skills. That's what I mean. You can put that aside and say he's a great, great fighter in those terms. But you know, when you look at Leonard, Hagler, Duran, Hearns, we know the extent of their greatness because they tested themselves. They fought their contemporaries. They fought a guy that was a 50-50 fight. And I don't think Floyd's ever had that. And that's my only complaint with the guy. Just give me one fight like that. At welterweight, which is what he really is a welterweight.
Okay, so who's the guy out there besides Manny that would be a contemporary?
Give me Sergio Martinez.
I would love to see that fight.
You know,
but let me put it out there like this: say he goes on and challenges Sergio. Yeah, say he goes out there and challenges Sergio, beats him the same way he beats Floyd. I mean, he beats Shane. Do we now quantify?
Yes, because Paul Williams is a prime fighter. This is not a guy that is, you know, in their 40s. This is not a smaller guy. This is a bigger, legitimate threat.
But here's the thing, Dave. We all thought the same thing with Shane. We thought this was a legitimate threat to Floyd. This was a legitimate threat to his zero.
Right.
And while he, you know, this is not the Shane of the prime years, this was still a formidable challenge against arguably the
difference with Burrow versus Mosley.
Yeah.
The difference would be that Shane, we were hoping he was still had something left to bring to the table. If Burrow didn't win, it would be because he's green and he's just relying on his raw athleticism. It's not quite a complete fighter, but you look at like the David Reed Trinidad fight, the same kind of fight. you know, one guy's complete, one guy's young and green, but very strong. I would consider that a very good win, taking out a guy that's younger and might be able to overcome. You know, at the very least, the guy's still fast, young, and strong. Whereas Shane, he looked his age. Let's just be real. Twitching and jingling and jangling, as Manny Stewart put it, all through that fight. He looked like a shot fighter, and we hate to say it, but it's true.
But,
and with Berto, he would have to muscle through a little bit because the guy's young.
I think Berto would be hopelessly outmatched. I give him way more credit for beating Shane, personally. I think Shane Mosley could fight Berto tomorrow and win.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly because here's the thing.
I think
what's going on, I think what goes on with Floyd is that the manner as to which, I mean, because let's face it, only one opponent has ever given him any type of a tough time. I mean, and that was Castillo.
Right.
You could say Zab for about four rounds would do well. But I mean, in reality, he folded in the last part. I think what's going on, I think what goes on with Floyd is the way that he beats these opponents really dismisses or eschews the true challenge that is out there for him. And prior to all this, everybody was fine saying, finally, Floyd's stepping up and finding a real welterweight. Finally, we get him fighting a legitimate threat to his zero. Finally, it's Shane Mosley. And then now he beats the brakes off of him. Oh, well, Shane's old. Shane couldn't pull the trigger. You know, do you guys ever think that maybe Shane couldn't pull the trigger simply because the trigger wasn't there for him to be pulled? I mean, Floyd didn't give him any opportunity. Let me finish, Gabe. Now, in round two, he landed, what, 13 power shots? You know how many he landed the rest of the fight in those 11 rounds? 27. That's two per round. I mean, don't you think that you can sit there and crap on Shane's performance all you want, but doesn't Floyd's performance take into account just how well he handled Shane and nullified and neutralized everything Shane was doing?
No, I agree.
Without question.
Yeah, I agree. And let me say this real quick. You know, Shane Mosley, yes, man, he outboxed him. He adjusted to him, and Shane had no answer. Now, whether or not Shane Mosley was old that night, it didn't really matter because Floyd made him look old. You know what I'm saying? Now, the other thing is this.
That's a tough question. I don't know about that.
Well, I mean, if we watch the fight over and over again, I mean, you could see that whatever Shane was going to bring to the table, after from 2000 of beating Oscar, we didn't have the same Shane. You know what I mean? I think that Shane of the past we weren't going to see again. We saw a Shane that now became very conservative with his punches, that Shane could have done enough. But the point is that any fighter to beat a Floyd Mayweather, you got to come with not just A and B game plans. You got to come with C, D, E, and F. That's how good the kid is. Now,
I would amend that just a little bit. If you only do have an A game plan, you certainly don't want to use it in round two. You want to use it in round 10 or 11. Because when you force that adjustment early in the fight, you're done.
Shane's never been an adjuster. I mean, I think what we saw was not the Shane that, you know, we weren't missing the Shane that fought Oscar. We were seeing the Shane that lost to Vernon Forrest. And then in the rematch, did the exact same fight, which was walk around and stare at him. And I'm not, you know, trying to take away from Floyd, but it's the thing that there's always a caveat. We are saying, yeah, finally he's fighting a welterweight, but then the other side of that coin is, and he's 38, and he hasn't fought in 16 months, which is not Floyd's fault. Granted, you know, Shane dropped the ball. That's more Golden Boy's fault. But there's always that caveat. When are we going to see finally a guy that's his age or a guy that's a little bit younger, that's undefeated and really dangerous, a guy with speed and power that isn't coming off a loss? When are we going to see that fight?
It's funny because back when this fight was made, that's exactly what we were all saying about Shane. You know, and what changes? I mean, simply because, you know, Mayweather put on a
Mayweather fans were the ones that actually took the biggest crap on Shane Mosley. So if there's an excuse after the fact, I think Floyd Mayweather's, you know, biggest fans are to blame for that.
right. And let me,
they kind of nullified the win before it ever happened.
Exactly. And I want to move away from this whole discussion because we could be on this for like another 40 minutes. We have some more stuff to cover, to put on air for the fans and to discuss about, you know. And I've got a lot of emails. And like I said, if you want to email Ernesto, Gabriel Montoya, Justin Streichhart, myself, Luis is not going to be on. I don't think he's going to be on today.
No, but we're going to arrange for that to make that happen.
Right, exactly. You can email us, any of us, and ask any questions or who would you like to see or hear on Leave It in the Ring at leaveitinthering@gmail.com. And there's other things that we're working to try to do for you guys, the fight fans, so we can get on the works. And I'm pretty sure you're going to be happy in what Ernesto and Luis are going to bring to the table as much as what Gabriel Montoya has brought to the table. I'm your host, 97 Rough, Dave Duenas. You got Justin Streichhart on the line. You got Ernesto. You got Gabe on the line with us right now. But like I said, I got emails. Fans are going, Dave, why haven't you had get somebody from the Floyd Mayweather camp? For what? That's all I got to say. For what? And I've emailed everybody back. What is Daddy Floyd going to say, and what is Roger Floyd going to say, and what is anybody
that we don't know boxing?
Yeah, exactly. You know, or that they don't speak for Floyd Mayweather or for Al Haymon. If anything, those are the guys we want on the show. Well, that's what we're trying to work on, is to get them to answer. Because I can hear either one of the Mayweathers that are not, you know, Floyd or Al Haymon say what we want to hear. I don't care for their opinion. I want to hear what he has to say and what are his plans.
If I want to know where Floyd's gym bag is, I'll call Leonard Ellerbe. Or if I want to hear somebody say no comment, I'll call Leonard Ellerbe. Or if I want to be lied to that I'm going to get a one-on-one, I'll call Leonard Ellerbe. Other than that, you know, there's no point on having him on the show.
Exactly, you know, and let's go on to another fight that's going to be happening in my hometown in the Bay Area, you know, where I come from, and it's going to be a great fight. I'm hoping it's going to be a great fight. You know, I'm hoping that, you know, Alan Green is going to come and back up all the stuff that he has said against Andre Ward. I had a chance to go down and see Andre Ward prepare, you know, an open workout for Alan Green that's going to be happening on the 19th of this month. And he has some interesting things to say. And he also had some interesting things to say about the L.A. Lakers, man, you know, about the game with the Celtics, you know, Boston. So I'm pretty sure you guys want to tune in and listen to this. So I'm going to play it right now really quick. And then I got to hear what Ernie's got to say about the Lakers, because I know you've been following it. I've been seeing every little tweet that you know out there, brother. So let's listen on real quick, man. Let's go with...
You're listening to Leave It in the Ring.
You said yesterday that knee was a non-issue. When did it become a non-issue?
It became a non-issue when I got back into rehab and started just strengthening the muscles around the knee, hamstring, VMO, all the different muscles that wrap around the knee. Once I did that, it alleviated the pain, alleviated the swelling, and it became a non-issue. As long as I stay consistent with that, I don't think I have any problems with the knee. It's when you back away from that, you lose a little muscle mass, and the knee has to start working harder. I think that's when the pain and the swelling starts. And, you know, like I said, I've been doing a great job with my physical therapist, Donald Chu, based in Castro Valley, and he's done a tremendous job in helping me rehab this thing. So it's perfectly fine.
He's tripped a little bit, you know, off and on. He even said maybe the postponement, he probably just had a cortisone shot. How do you feel about that? And does that, you know, add fuel to the fire even more so than I think?
Yeah, I mean, like I said yesterday on the conference call, the international conference call, I anticipated that. I mean, I know Alex Green's been there, the way he talks, the way he carries himself outside the ring. And I anticipated as soon as, that when the news hit the mainstream media that he was going to come back and say that I'm scared. You don't get this far in boxing, and you don't box this long being scared of guys. You know, you're always aware, you're always, you know, giving your opponent healthy respect, but being afraid, I just think that was the wrong choice of words for him to use. I love big time sports just in general. One of my favorite athletes is Kobe Bryant. He reminds me a lot of myself in terms of just his demeanor and his focus. I watched him play the Lakers. I think the last time they played here, you know, that's a pretty good seat. So I just watched Kobe before during his warm-up, and Kobe didn't crack a smile. He worked on what he needed to work on, and he was disciplined and focused until they were up, the Lakers, by 30 points. and that's literally the first time I saw him crack a smile. And it kind of reminds me of myself because I'm kind of like that. When it's time to go to work, I kind of get, you know, my game face on, and I go to work, and I don't feel relieved until it's over yet. So absolutely, I watch demeanors. I watch what guys are going to step up, which guys have bad games. That's the beauty of watching big time.
Who's going to win the series?
Lakers in six. They'll split one piece in the two remaining games in Boston, and then with that momentum, they're going home to close it out. You can quote me on that.
All right.
How's your jump shot?
It's pretty good. I don't want to brag on my basketball skills. If anything, I got to brag on my competitiveness. I don't know how good my skills are, but I will compete at the end of the day. So.
I read a little bit about your background. Played football in high school, running back and safety.
Right.
How'd you do in that, and how come you didn't, you know, pursue football?
Well, actually, my first love was baseball. I was a pitcher and a shortstop. That was my very first love, and you know, I would have loved to went to the next level if it wasn't for boxing, and baseball, or football. But when I started playing football, I was tired of boxing. You know, I had been doing it since I was 9 years old. Kind of dibbled and dabbled as a freshman, but my sophomore and junior year is when I really stepped it up and started getting a few looks in colleges. I think I could have went to the next level. I just had to put on 20-25 pounds, and you know, but I felt like, you know what, I started missing boxing again, and I didn't want to put all my eggs in that basket, so I returned back to the sport and working out real hard.
Seems like it's been a good choice.
But I'll be honest, I often think about, you know, what would happen if I pursued baseball or pursued football. You know, my kids are the same way. They seem to be pretty athletic in whatever they play, and I'm kind of the same way. So I think I might have done well in those other sports if I'd have been.
I know you're not going to give too much of your game plan away, but how do you plan on kind of attacking Green? What's kind of what do you see in Green, some of his habits, some of his strengths?
It's no secret he has his left hand is his bread and butter, if you will. That's what he really likes to throw. He wings a lot of hooks. You know, a lot of guys pull back from his hooks, and he likes to. He'll close his eyes and swing that punch. We're definitely aware of that, and we just have to fight a smart, disciplined fight. But I think that, you know, he's going to realize that he'll be a lot more aggressive than he thinks he's going to be. But just like in all my fights, it's not, you know, there can't just be one game plan. You have to be ready to make adjustments on the fly, and I'm ready to do that. And at the end of the day, it's about getting our hand raised and retaining our title and putting on a great show for the hometown.
So, Andre, let me ask you this. So when you step in the ring, like with right now, what you just mentioned about Allen Green, sometimes a little wide with them shots. When you're sparring, do you get somebody that's similar to his style? And then on your next sparring guy, do you have somebody that's tighter in style than Green to make sure you can make those adjustments if needed?
Yeah, you try to do the best job you can to get guys that emulate your opponents. You never get it just right. That's important, but you don't want to put too much stock in that. You have to kind of stay, I want to say it the right way. You want to just be aware that anything can happen in the ring. You know, some guys, they get locked in on one style. This is what the guy's going to do. This is what's going to happen. And they get in the ring, and the guy is pretty much doing the same thing, but he made some adjustments, and then you're lost. So we had great sparring for this fight. Guys bringing it, you know, guys that I had to hold off every single day. Not guys coming in here patting me on the back, but guys that got something to prove. So we had tremendously great sparring, and the drills. Drills are important. So you get in there with your coach, and working on the little things, situational drills. Well, okay, when this happens, you need to do this. Hey, when you go in like this, hey, don't pull your head back. Little things that we work on, and that's a big part. So sparring is good. The situational drills with your coach is good as well.
Let me ask you this. When you and Virgil guys are looking at certain tapes, and you're looking at certain things that Green's doing, are you looking at it, okay, I could take advantage of this, but not put all my, like you said, eggs in the basket, because he may adjust on that flaw.
Right. That's exactly right. You see certain things in the fight, and you just make a mental note. You make a mental note, and you say, okay, in this situation, he likes to do this. In these situations, he likes to do that. At this stage, there's not too many secrets.
Mm-hmm.
Once you fought on TV several times, he has tape on me, I have tape on him. Can you stop what I'm bringing to the table? Can you deal with it? Can I stop and deal with what you're bringing to the table? There's always game plans, but you pretty much see the same fighters
each and every time out. Guys have the same game plan with Floyd Mayweather. Pressure. He's not tough. He's not. And for somewhere in that fight, he breaks that down and takes control. That's what it's about. There's really no secrets right at this stage in our career. You know, his coach has seen me. I met John David Jackson back in 08 in Houston at the Olympic trial.
Uh-huh.
And he was aware of me then. We talked, him and I talked then. And so he knew me way back in 08. So there's really no secret. We've been watching Green. At the end of the day, this is what I'm bringing. This is what you're bringing. Let's see who can get it done.
You beat Miranda.
Well, there you go, man. Andre Ward talking about his b-ball game. And
that's a genius right there, saying the Lakers in six.
Yeah, I like him more now than ever before.
Yeah. He's got diehard fans over here now.
Oh, man, you know. And Bonte Hill, who has joined Leaving the Ring as a writer, he was asking some of the questions, and I want to thank Bonte for joining the crew. He was out there with me covering it, and it was a lot of... It was at the King's Gym.
I said, isn't that a great gym?
It is, man. The only thing I didn't like was that, you know, it was an open workout, but it was, they had, you know, other people training, so it was a little loud. It was kind of hard to get the audio right. I worked on the audio. It made it as clear as I could. You know, even with the mic, it was just picking up. I mean, it was packed with people training, and you're trying to, you know, get everything that he's saying on there. And I got to say, you know, I know it was a little tough to hear, but he did have some pretty good quotes. You know, he did question, you know, Alan Green's mindset and heart stepping in the ring, having a similar opponent, Miranda. He was questioning that, saying that, you know, hey, you know, I'm at the peak of my game and mindset, where Alan Green, I got to question him when he was questioning me, which is, it's kind of dumb, and I kind of mentioned it's kind of like a reverse type of, you know, the reverse up between them now, where Andre Ward had been in question for some time about Hart, if he had enough to get in with the tougher opponents. Now it's Alan Green. Does he have enough to stay up with the Super 6 tournament? I don't know. Gabriel, what do you think? Does Alan Green, is he mentally okay right now to keep up with what's going on in the six-man tournament?
It depends on who he's fighting, you know. That's the beauty of the Super 6, is it's all about the matchups, you know. It's all about just the matchmaking, you know, as we're seeing, you know, all through this. I don't know. You know, Alan Green is a real up-and-down kind of fighter. You know, one time you get him against Jadon Codrington and he blows the guy out. Next time, you know, you see him real lackadaisical and kind of, you know, and then getting dropped by one of his sparring partners. And, you know, I think it was Donnie McQuarrie.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to tell what you're going to get with Alan Green. He's been out of the ring for a while. He may have some rust.
He is actually the true definition of an instrument.
Yes, he really is. You know, he's just an up-and-down fighter, hot and cold. And I think Ward beats him just on intelligence, versatility, and just straight-up class. Unless, like Steve Kim always points out, that Andre Ward's chin is not what we think it is, and he gets caught and gets knocked out, that's the only way I see Alan Green winning. It's the only way. I don't see him outboxing. Maybe,
no.
You know, it's like Forrest versus Mosley, where he hurts Andre really bad early, and Andre gets really gun-shy. Other than that, I just don't see him winning.
I agree.
I like Andre in this tournament to win the whole thing.
And you know, we're going to have to end it early. I'm getting right now an email from Blog Talk saying they're having a lot of trouble. They're going to end up cutting our show in about 10 minutes.
Too many Mexicans in one room.
But real quick, Strikeheart, does Alan Green bring a puncher's chance? Are we not giving him the credit of what he could do? Can he really toss up a big can he throw a wrench into this party the way Floyd Mayweather did with Manny Pacquiao's party?
I mean, it would be silly not to give him a puncher's chance to beat Andre Ward. It's just, I think, realistically, that's the only chance you can really give him. Let's just say he has his best night out as a boxer. He doesn't outbox Andre Ward. And even if somehow he was able to compete with Andre Ward in just a simple boxing match, which he can't, he's doing it in Oakland, so it's not going to matter anyway. you're gonna have to, if you're picking Andre or Alan Green to win by anything but a knockout, I really question what your train of thought is. So I give him a chance. I just don't think I give him a great chance.
Ernie,
you know, 8 out of 10 times I think Andre Ward wins this pretty easily.
Ernie, let me ask you this, you know, because Alan Green has never been shy of words. You know, when he was on Leave It in the Ring, he said, I'll fight Andre Ward in front of his church. You know, the guy's pretty brutal when it comes in terms of expressing himself. You know, he's not one of those guys, you know. But since the fight has been signed, since the fight has been cemented, he's been pretty quiet. Is that a sign of I'm taking Andre Ward very serious?
Of course. You know what? Honestly, I think he's not necessarily taking Andre Ward on very seriously. I think he's taking on the opportunity that he's been given very seriously. You know, I think, you know, because I'm sure all of us have seen the fight, you know, the fight camps leading up to this and his segue into the tournament. And I really think that the opportunity that both him and his advisor, Greg Leone, have seen is that he can jump right in with a really stellar performance, i.e. a knockout of Andre Ward, that he gets right back. He gets right into the mix. And I think he's taking it as such. Now, unfortunately, I really do believe that Alan Green is more Zab Judah than he is Floyd Mayweather. I think he's a lot of flash and not a lot of consistency, you know. And the thing that you know that really defines his who Alan Green really is just looking at his whole career as a whole. It's a lot of up and down, like Gabe said, and how he is as a career is how he fights in the ring. It's a lot of up and down. Sure, and at some point, you're going to see some brilliance in there because he's got fast hands, got good pop. He really when he wants to, he's really schooled in there. But then you see these big lulls in either action or he lets the opponent back into the game. It's really the same MO that Zab Judah's had all throughout his career. You know, if you think about it, I mean, really do. I mean, there's some brilliance in there, but there's also a lot of mental lapses or physicalities that just, you know, don't lend Alan Green to be that upper echelon elite fighter that we would like to see him be.
If they were consistent with their fighting as they were with their shit talking, they'd be brilliant.
Oh yeah.
He also has said that, you know, as far as any of the matchups go in the tournament, he said multiple times that he feels like Andre Ward is his biggest challenge, and he's quick to say that he'll win all the rest of them. So I think that he is pretty serious about this fight. Maybe that is why he's being so quiet.
Well, yeah, I think he'd get mugwumped by Abraham. I think eventually Abraham would get to him and just splatter him, pretty much.
I think he would, if he gets outboxed by Andre Ward, I would have to say he's going to get clearly outboxed by Andre Durrell, the Matrix.
Yeah.
You know, and
battle of the mentally weak there. I don't know.
Right. Right, and then everybody, you know, Gabriel Montoya, because I was getting even some emails while we're on the show, where's Gabriel? Gabriel was on the set of his new porno flick that he's doing. Riders Under Fire. Riders Under Fire.
Brokeback Mountain 3.
It's a web series by One Step Productions called Project 420. And I'm just doing some technical work on it, and you know, holding the script and doing different things behind the scenes. But it's a production company that's really up and coming, and they're part of a website that I'll be writing for as well on the side, non-boxing stuff. So
that's okay.
You can tell us.
You can tell us after what the name of the show. I heard it's the making of the remaking of the autobiography of John Holmes. Just that you didn't get the leading role as John Holmes. You got the wife. You're playing the wife in the movie, brother.
I'm the sad comic porno relief. That's the guy that doesn't get
laid. Oh man. Anyways, so Andre Ward predicts Lakers by six or something.
That's right.
Against the Celtics, and hopefully next week's show, man, is going to be a lot better. Like I said, we have some other things in the works. As soon as this show is over with, me and the rest of the guys, we're going to sit down and have a meeting, because there are some other things that we want to bring to Leaving in the Ring that I think that you, the hardcore fight fans out there, would appreciate. Like I said, there is a lot of stuff in the sport, you know, that needs to be covered, needs to be pushed out there, you know, because that's the whole reason why we wanted to do a radio show. We felt there was some lack in how it is and how it is covered. You know, I love the sport completely. You know, I know some people will get on there and they want to talk bad about the fighters or talk bad about particular things that are happening around in the sport. But in every major sport, when there's money involved, you're going to have something bad. That's just the way life is. Why bitch about it all day? Make a change. Let's do something about it. And that's exactly what we're trying to do on Leaving the Ring. Like I said, I'm your host, David Duenas, brother. You got Strike on the line. You got April. You got Ernesto. And we're just trying to bring it to you guys as real as we can. Any thoughts right there, Ernie? Any final thoughts right now before the show ends?
I just want to give a quick shout out to a fighter that I've known and kind of a lot of people have slept on. That's Mercito Gesta. He won Friday his biggest fight on Telemundo, fourth round knockout over the previously pretty tough Oscar Meza. In fact, he stopped Oscar Meza faster than Bam Bam Rios. So it's a fighter that you guys should be looking out for. Filipino quick lefty out of San Diego. He used to spar up and he used to train up in Wild Card, but his trainer moved down to San Diego. Carl Pelosa, who's Jerry's brother. And someone to be looking out for. I just wanted to give him a shout out and say congratulations, Mercito, and hopefully we'll hear some big things from him.
No, you know, no mercy, Mercito. I gotta say, man, you know, for a guy that doesn't have a lot of KOs, he sure fights like he's a big puncher. And he did a fantastic job against Meza. And I watched it, and it was the first time I really had a chance to really see everything he did. And I was... You know, he got hit a little bit too much. I think they need to work on that. But exciting, yes. A guy that you should keep an eye on, absolutely. Gabriel, any final thoughts, brother?
Well, I'd just like to throw out a shout-out to Mr. James Kirkland, the guy that Dougie Fisher refers to as my son. I still have to know that he's going to be getting out, getting some fights. James, you complete me.
Yeah. October 2nd.
Justice Strike Card, brother, any final thoughts? Before we get off air at this moment.
Yeah. I just got to make it clear that I don't care about the Lakers and Celtics because, you know, if it's not boxing, then I don't care.
I don't care. Exactly, man. Really quick, I'm going to make a shout-out to Donnell Livingston, a prospect that we've been following for some time on Leaving the Rings, a good friend. And he's being the sparring partner for Julio Cesar Chavez. And the word is he's giving Julio Cesar Chavez the works.
If he's listening, I've got his protector here signed, sealed, and packaged ready to go. So it's going to be on his way today.
I know he's listening because he actually texted me earlier, Dave, where's my video, man? Where's my fight? And I'm going to have it for you a little later, brother. I've been having some problems in trying to get everything. I don't know. Maybe I know it's Block Talk right now because they're sending me, but none has been going right for me today, man. I don't know what it is. It's just one of those days. It must be Friday the 13th for me today or something. Nothing seems to be going okay with me right now. But
nice to make it troublesome on my debut, man. Thanks a lot.
I know. Brother. Ernie, we're going to get it right, man. You know, we're going to get it right for the Thursday show. Anyways, brothers, man, it's always a pleasure. I always have a great time being on Leaving the Ring, talking boxing. The one thing that I love to talk about most, that's why nobody invites me to their house anymore because that's all I know what to talk about. Don't talk about politics and religion or anything else, but talking about boxing, hey, that's something I think I might know about. I don't know. Some fight fans tell me I don't know shit.
Yeah.
Anyway, hey, till next week, brothers. You guys have a good night.
Guys, be out.
You too.
Peace.